You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching.
You don't have to take a drink for that one.
Nope, not yet. So you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, J.D., joined by the amazing Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely. We're joining you for the 100th time. We never knew.
Is your body ready?
Yes. We hope your liver is ready. We'll talk about that in a second. You know, when we started this out, we never knew that it would go 100 episodes. And then I realized, oh, wait, we're a podcast. We can't be canceled. So, I do want to send a quick thank you. We hope some of you are enjoying the Fanboy Versus Drinking Game, developed in part by Jetfire 2009, one of our Twitter followers. So really appreciate him doing that. I took those rules and incorporated them and reshifted them into a more formal list for our listeners. If you want it and want to go ahead and start playing before we get into the rest of the show, you can go to fanboyversus.com. We have a post there for the drinking game. You can see all the rules, get your drinks ready, and you should be 21 if you're in the States, at least, to play. Mm-hmm. I think in Europe you can drink at 6. Is that right? 6?
Okay. I know in Ireland, yeah.
Legal drinking age. And it's not, like, legal. It's, like, required. It's like, here you go. All right, it's time to get started.
I really should have something here, but I don't.
What? So, what? Wait, you're Irish. That's against the law.
Yeah, I thought that was like...
Broadcasting live.
Yeah. If it wasn't for whiskey, I think... If it wasn't for whiskey, that the Irish would have taken over the world and dominated...
Global power.
That's according to Family Guy, was it?
Oh, everything. Yeah. That is an old joke. But sure, Family Guy's fine. We'll give them credit. So this is it. This is our 100th episode. We welcome you again. And we're going to be talking about some comics. We should have a special guest here, hopefully, shortly. We'll talk about news. And it's basically a regular show, except we're going to talk about Avengers as well.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Just like
saw that last week. No big deal, I guess.
If there could be an in essence opposite film of, like, Green Lantern... This would be
what? Why does everyone dish Green Lantern?
Because it was terrible.
That bad. It wasn't.
It was kind of awful.
Did you see Green Lantern, JD?
I saw Green Lantern.
I think eventually
you just
stopped
it in the end. Yes. Yeah, so I couldn't remember.
Yes.
I remember you didn't see it at the time. We talked you out of it.
Yeah. I think somebody eventually forced him to watch it, and it was a painful experience, but he endured.
I did endure through. Yes, Green Lantern. It was sort of awful.
Was it that bad?
It was really terrible. I appreciate your like enthusiasm, Nicole, but no, really, it was kind of awful.
I'll say something positive for it. It was a movie.
It definitely was a movie.
Yeah.
It did feature a person with a ring.
And there was a person in green, and there was a lantern. So
it
was
a lantern. It didn't lie. The title was correct.
I mean, all of the elements were there. It just sort of sucked.
Wasn't that bad.
Okay, but a better movie than that is definitely Avengers.
Oh, God,
so
yes.
We will be talking about that at the end of the show, like we do when we save good things for the end of the show. One more thing I will point out, if you do watch the show, either live or recorded, we have moved to a widescreen format. So one, two.
Why?
Oh, my God.
Wait. Is that a fat joke? Is that
no?
What's going on?
No, I know. I
really?
Do need more screen.
Really?
And I may leave it up, but I did make a special background for this episode. It is made up of 100th issue covers of a absolute crap ton of comics. So go check it out if you're not watching the video format. You should at least go check out the video just to see the covers, because it took me like an hour and a half to put together. So, you know, I'd appreciate 10 minutes of at least looking at it.
I researched 100 issue covers just to see if there are like some really iconic ones. And like Captain America number 100 seemed pretty iconic.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Uncanny X-Men was a really nice looking cover. But then I was kind of like disappointed when I started looking at like some DC 100 issues.
Some of the DCs are like, oh, by the way, this is also 100th issue. Well, some of them are really early too, and they didn't even like, you know, realize that was going to be a thing
back then.
Like, I think Superman's was just him walking with some gangsters.
It is. Well, there's like him and a Clark Kent. It is on the screen. You can kind of see it in the top right, top left there. But yeah, there's like him and some little guy talking about Clark Kent being Superman. So I think it's supposed to be something. Clark Kent and a little guy and Superman.
And then I was amazed to find that Spectacular Spider-Man 100 had the spot on the cover.
It did. I was really excited. I thought that was awesome. I was like, sweet, we've talked about the spot recently. So it's very
we
topical.
Love the spot.
So anyway, check it out. There's some good ones on there. Iron Man's on there, but Journey to Mystery. Fantastic Four is in there. Even Shazam, Captain Marvel, I've got that one on there. So, you know, check it out. It's a good time. All right. So, just like we do most weeks. Again, we weren't here last week. I went to BotCon, so we weren't here. BotCon was cool. I got to see the IDW panel and talked about a lot of stuff that's coming up for that. So that should be exciting stuff. But other news than Chris McFeely, if we have
films,
any.
Films are where it's at, you know, it's all films that it's been a busy sort of, it's the start of the summer film season and there haven't been a lot of major comic book news, outside of that. I mean, for instance, this week we got a new Amazing Spider-Man trailer. Now this rolled out with the Avengers in cinemas, in America. We didn't get that over here. So that's what
we got the old trailer. I was so disappointed.
Yeah,
I didn't watch it like on YouTube or something.
I got the new one.
Yeah, I saw the old one. I was very sad. I was all excited for the new one. I was like, oh, this is, oh, that's the, oh, damn it.
The new one, I think the new one reveals a little too much.
Yeah, there's really no there's no guessing about what this is about anymore, you know.
Yeah,
but
there's no guessing of who the bad guy is because they pretty much showed him on the new trailer. So
that it's that creepy scientist guy who keeps saying vaguely threatening things.
But dude, Lizard has a lab coat. That makes
he's probably going to just have that for the transformation.
Yeah,
I don't care. He's got a lab coat for the heart of the...
Purple trousers will set it off.
You just need it for a second, really. I mean, you know, just a little bit.
Just as long as like he punches somebody while he's wearing the lab coat, I'm good.
I'm still feeling pretty good about Amazing Spider-Man overall, you know.
Mm-hmm. Have we talked about the not to pee on Amazing Spider-Man? But have we talked about the new Batman?
That's right. That also happened this week. There was a new Batman trailer. I would love to be excited for this film, but I don't know what it is. I just can't get ramped up.
It's because I think if you give it 2 weeks, you know, we're still in the Avengers hype. Just give it a few weeks until when Avengers starts to come down. You might be a little more excited for it.
I guess, even with that first trailer, I was like, I'm not looking forward to this for some reason.
Well, I
don't think it'll be able to top Dark Knight, first of all.
No.
It would be really hard to do that. But also, now, I don't remember if I've gone through this whole routine on the show before, but because I've been saying it an awful lot at work to people who I've been having a lot of different discussions with. Have I talked about the changing landscape of superhero cinema on the show? Does anybody remember?
I think I've seen you mention it on Twitter, or maybe a little bit here, but yeah, I'd love to, you know, that's a good discussion.
Well, you know, it's like 2008. Iron Man, Dark Knight, both happen. Dark Knight is world record breaking, top great film. You know, no question, no argument at all. Iron Man happens also same year. Iron Man is basically the first film of the next generation of superhero films. You know, prior to Iron Man, the world needed indoctrinated into the idea of the good superhero film. So you had the X-Men films, but they couldn't go too far. They had to just be all dressed in black. They had to keep that real-world feel. Batman Begins is also the is the farthest to the real world everything is. And Spider-Man swings the other way. It goes for the unreal, most cartoonish quality of superheroes. And that's not a knock against it, but it does, you know, it shoots for more humor, but it's more farcical in its humor. Not a knock again, but, you know, in its humor, it's more farcical than witty, you know. And, you know, wit is something Spider-Man should have, but, you know, we all know the Raimi movies just really didn't. It went for more slapsticky, farcical sort of humor. And it's like Dark Knight is the pinnacle of the movies of that era. But then Iron Man in the same year comes along, kicks the doors in, and basically says, no, like this. And shows you how to bring the two schools of that, you know, from brings humor and real world serious human drama together. And we have Iron Man, we have Incredible Hulk, we have Iron Man 2, we have Captain America, we have Thor, culminating in the Avengers. And in that four-year span where we've had all those films have cumulatively changed the face of superhero cinema, where it is now okay to have bright colors, fun, witty comedy, powerful action, explosions, without it being looked down upon. Or you mean you could never have done the Avengers 10 years ago.
Oh, no.
Because
no.
The world was not ready for superhero films that way. I mean, I'm not knocking the X-Men. The X-Men X2 is still one of the best superhero films.
X2
is
awesome.
Yeah. I'm not knocking the Raimi Spider-Man films, except maybe for the third one. I think
think even Raimi knocks that one.
Everything that they did was key to evolving the public consciousness into the way where it is now, so that Avengers is a thing that can succeed. And now, here comes The Dark Knight Rises, which is practically archaic in its outlook. It is the grim, dark, real world, which is outright just the less appealing prospect after 6 years of bright, fun, colorful superhero stuff. It's not that I'm saying it's going to be bad. It's not that I'm certainly gonna go and see it. I'm gonna see it right away. But I can't get ramped up for it. I mean, it is superheroes as a morality play, as a prism for real world issues. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying there's no place for that in superheroes. Obviously, I mean, the most successful superhero comic books and some of the most famous ones work in that manner. But it's like The Dark Knight just swings the whole other way, where, you know, I mean, The Dark Knight, come on. The Dark Knight Returns is about a man acting outside the law to catch a terrorist with an illegal wiretapping program. It's just a metaphor for, you know, real-life political concerns, where the Avengers is about fucking aliens!
Boom! I mean, and he said something funny, and that's awesome, and, you know, yeah. I don't know how much, like, the psychology has changed, you know, in terms of, I mean, I think in some sense, yeah, I think we're ready for something fun. I think we're ready, you know, I think the public is ready for something that has just a little bit of depth, but we want to have, like, that fun action element as well. You know, I think we've almost gone that other direction where, you know, in our real lives, it's like there's all this unemployment rate and the world economy and all this, you know, other stuff. Unrest and things, and we just want something fun, you know. Yeah. It's like
and Dark Knight Rises. It'll turn out Bane was just like somebody who was thrown out on the street because of like the credit crisis, and he's just really mad, and he's gonna like.
Okay, well, I think no, it's okay. Like, with the new trailer for Batman, I was able to understand Bane a lot
yes.
more. Still yeah, not done. Very clear. He's not perfectly clear, but you could understand him a lot better.
I tell you, what jumped out at me actually was the fact that it really felt like the dialogue was being overlaid on top of the footage mm-hmm. instead yeah. of actually coming out of the actor
yeah.
because yes. it was so clear. There is never going to be a happy medium with that.
No. Does this look, I mean, I'm kind of confused. I mean, obviously I know that Nolan has pulled a lot from Long Halloween for some of this. I mean, does this look like, I mean, I know we've talked about this a little bit before. I can't tell if it's like Nightfall or something after, or I can't tell.
It feels like he's taking something from Nightfall, because there's like a comment in there where he's like, I'm not going to kill you first or something. He's like, first I'm going to break you or something.
It does seem to be that direction.
Batman tries to wear down, Bane tries to wear down Batman and morally defeat Batman before physically finishing him, which seems to be that. And I am still not entirely unconvinced that Batman's not going to die in this.
It could happen. I mean,
He'll like die. He takes that line in the trailer where they said, you know, you've given too much. You know, you've given him everything. And he says, no, there's something I haven't given him yet. It's like, is that how it's going to end?
He'll die, and the kid from Third Rock from the Sun will be the new Batman.
Yeah.
Hey, there's something wrong with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
I'm not saying there is anything wrong with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Gordon-Levitt going to turn out to be Dick Grayson?
I don't think he is. Like, I don't think we'll get a Robin, but I feel like that could be where it's going. Because he's in that. He's in
I'm saying that the character himself could turn out to be named like Dick Grayson or something just for
what the character name is.
I think it had a character name. At least the early speculation I saw is it was supposed to be referencing a character from Long Halloween.
There was a lot of that rolling around. Hang on, let me just look up who...
I read that, by the way, although I did pick it up on Free Comic Book Day yesterday.
Yeah, his name is John Blake, who is a beat cop assigned to special duty under Commissioner Gordon.
Ah, I didn't know he had a name.
Well, that's...
We've seen a little of him in the trailers. I thought they were kind of keeping it down, though.
Well, he was all over the newest one, the newest. Let's see, is there... he doesn't seem to be a pre-existing character.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah. And he's all over the trailer, but I'm not talking about dying. We'll see.
I don't know. I mean, obviously I'm going to watch it.
Oh, yeah.
But, it's going to be hard to... I mean, you know, obviously we're going to talk about Avengers in more detail at the end of the show, but, I mean... Face hurting, smiling, watching Avengers, you know? It's like...
Batman, you're just going to be like...
brooding.
Sad face.
So, without spoiling anything about Avengers, after you saw it, don't you kind of feel sorry for DC Comics and their film?
Oh my God, they're just like...
what have they got? Like, after... Okay, Batman's done this summer. That's it.
I mean...
We got Superman next year. If Superman tanks like Green Lantern did...
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's over, isn't it? I mean, like, what are they going to do?
I have no idea. I mean, it's...
I've said it before, like... I don't remember if I've said this on the show, but it's something I say in store a lot. DC needed Green Lantern to be their Iron Man, their movie that kicked the doors in and said, this is the rest of our universe, welcome to it. And it just
There's no reason why it shouldn't have been, other than...
It could have been, but it wasn't. And as far as I'm concerned, that makes Flash DC's last chance.
Yeah.
Because you're never going to get a Martian Manhunter movie. You're not going to get an Aquaman movie. You're not going to get a Hulk movie.
What about Cyborg? What about Cyborg? Everyone's into robots.
Who? Cyborg
could work.
Yeah, he could work as a solo film.
But these are films.
I mean, you could make a Hawkman, a Martian Manhunter, and Aquaman. But these are the films that will have to happen after said metaphorical doors are kicked in.
You couldn't.
They are Thor's and the Captain America.
Yeah, you couldn't make. I mean, literally, I'm driving home and I'm thinking. I even said to my wife, I'm like, you know, it's like, what do you do? Because we'll talk about it again more later. But it's like, well, what do you do with like Black Widow and Hawkeye? You know, it's like you put them in a movie together. You call it Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And you call it a day, you know? It's like, that's the way you would do those characters. You couldn't do that before Iron Man or even before this movie, you know? So, but I could totally see an agent.
You probably could have, but it would have been like a Sci-Fi Channel original.
Exactly. But I could totally see like an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. movie coming out of it with the two of them. I don't know that...
Call it Hawkeye and Black Widow, and then you can do their origin.
Yeah, you could do Hawkeye and Black Widow, call it... And then subtitle
their origin is tied
S.H.I.E.L.D.
together in the comics anyway, so you can just do that, you know? And as far as I'm concerned, the wheels have already started turning and all the crazy things that'll never happen, but as far as I'm concerned, like, if Captain America 2 is the Winter Soldier, because I'm pretty sure it will be, then, you know, establish that Black Widow actually is much older than she looks, like in the comics, you know, she's been treated with a formula, like in the comics. Formula may be distilled from all the studies they did of the Winter Soldier when he was in their custody. We wind the films together some more.
Yeah. I like these ideas.
You know, you can have that, Marvel. Really, you can have that.
Yeah, I mean, there you go. It's a freebie. Thanks for our 100th episode.
Barricade64, Josh just said, well, maybe WB will take another look at Joss Whedon, a Wonder Woman script, now that they see how much Avengers have made.
Wonder Woman is not the way to go, but I could see it being seriously revisited.
Well, take Avengers. They actually have a very strong female character. They have Black Widow.
That's right.
And the thing is maybe that's the route that DC needs to go down. They need to have a strong female character for the DC nation, you know, like Wonder Woman. I mean, everyone and their dog knows Wonder Woman. I mean, it'd be nice to see how they do that. So
I'd love to see Wonder Woman, though.
It's like everybody and their dog knows who Wonder Woman is. But you go and ask your mum, who will absolutely know who Wonder Woman is. Anybody, go to your mum right now. We'll wait. But it's like you ask her to tell you anything about Wonder Woman other than the fact she was played by Linda Carter.
Yeah,
she's not going to be able to do it.
My mom probably would know because growing up we watched it together.
So I mean, outside of say, you know, bulletproof bracelets and the lasso.
We talked about this a while ago.
Like,
Wonder Woman is known for what she is, which is to say the female hero icon, and not anything about the character or anything she's ever actually done.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but she's sort of like the superhero that's famous for being famous. I mean,
to Kim Kardashian.
But I mean, that's the problem.
JD just said Kim Kardashian would make a good Wonder Woman. Oh my God!
What? I did not. I firmly deny that I said that. I merely said that she is just known as a hero. And then,
Nicole, tweet that right now.
No, I did not say that.
It's not. We're not slamming Wonder Woman, though. No. That's the thing. She occupies a strange place where she is famous for being famous. Where she comprises a lot of muddled ideas on patriotism and feminism, with some inherently creepy elements that are born out of her odd beginnings.
S&M, is that where you're going for the S&M thing?
Strip down to basics and rebuild if it's going to work on television. And we've already seen we've seen David E. Kelly's attempt, and that's not the way to do it. You can put that's one column. You just put the line through where multimedia merchandise empire heiress. We can just put the line through that as a thing to do with Wonder Woman, and just go down to the next one.
I think part of the problem is that Green Lantern was really their hope because Green Lantern is their relatable character. Green Lantern is one of the few characters in the DC universe. And pick any Green Lantern, and I don't care which one you pick, but any Green Lantern is one of the few characters in the DC universe that is a regular guy that gets powers. And
The Flash is the next.
You know, if you can say he's a regular guy, because he's a little bit of a.
He's
a little bit of an idealist, but you know, you can give him that. But really, I mean, you think about it, it's like all of these characters in the Marvel Universe are really average people. I mean, you give that to Stan Lee. I mean, maybe that was something that, you know, Stan got right in a lot of the stuff that he did in creating characters. He knew how to take, you know, here's someone that you can relate to that now has special powers. Whereas DC was always, he was born an alien, and he's king of Atlantis, and he's
millionaire genius.
he's broken child, you know. I mean, so there's just these things that it's very hard to relate to the general public, and it's hard to get behind them in that way.
But then you look and see what the new 52 is doing, and it is stripping a lot of characters down to much more relatable concepts. Where you look at what they've done with Superman in Action Comics, where he is reduced to being an orphan with no one to guide him through the world, and he's suffering all of these much more relatable real life type problems instead of everybody putting him up on a pedestal. You know, these are the sorts of approaches DC is making with the new 52. As I say, I think Flash is their last chance. Green Lantern was an odd one, though, because Green Lantern was a product of his circumstances, and that you could never have made a Green Lantern movie even a couple of years ago. The concept would have just never sold, but the sheer constant widening popularity of the character, thanks to Geoff Johns, really made that viable as a film, and they shafted it away, so let's try The Flash.
Well, because they made it too complicated. I think they got too bogged down in the details.
Yeah, just didn't.
You know,
Josh asks another question: which Flash would be better to do, Barry Allen or Wally West?
I love Wally West, but it probably doesn't matter. It really doesn't.
I mean, they're all basically
they're all the same. Wally and Barry have the same origin.
Yeah. I love Wally. I mean, I Wally West is awesome. He's my Flash, but you know what? Really, it doesn't matter if it's Barry Allen. It kind of makes more sense if it is Barry Allen because they would go Flash with like, the first guys, Hal Jordan, Barry Allen, you know.
Flash is pretty white bread. Right? There's nothing to, you know.
So.
I'd love to see a Flash movie. Oh my God. Think of what they could do like special effects wise with that. That could be amazing.
Now yeah. do you think they could pull off a Justice League movie as well as they pulled off Avengers?
God no.
If they can build it up.
They have to do all the set. I mean they're 8 years out from that. They haven't even had the first movie to really nail it down. So
like, would Avengers make them jump the gun? Like, you know, Marvel took their time. They built up the characters before the Avengers. Would DC make the mistake of saying, well, we're just going to do Justice League? So screw
well,
that.
that'll it'll never fly. I mean,
that
I,
would be crazy
I don't think
if
the
they
studios
did that.
would even let that go.
I can't see it happening.
Well, I think it's time to change gears just a little bit. As we've talked about it, we'll talk about maybe this more as we get into our Avengers, but. The time has come. We've been talking this week that we were going to have a special guest on. I had the pleasure of meeting this person in person, and they were kind enough to say they would be on the show. So let me give a moment. Bear with me here as I bring in our special guest for this, our 100th episode.
Hello.
John?
Hello!
Hi.
This is JD, Fanboy Versus. I'd like everyone to give a big welcome to John Barber, Senior Editor for Transformers at IDW.
Woo!
Hello!
Hey!
So, John, welcome. You're on with Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem. Do I have video?
It's not up just yet. We do have a lovely picture of you, though. So you may hit the video button and we'll get you on. So first of all, it was great to meet you at BotCon. Thanks for coming to BotCon. The IDW panel was really, really fantastic. There you are.
Yeah, hi, John. Backlit so nobody can see me.
That's perfect. That's the way to do it. It seems mysterious.
Who is this man?
Who is
the man
of
the shadows
on our show? So we just want to talk to you a little bit about what's going on with Transformers, IDW. And first of all, I think on behalf of our crew, I'd like to say, thanks for making Transformers awesome.
Yeah.
The relaunch with, More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise has just been, it's just been dandy.
Thanks. I can't take all the credit. Andy Schmidt set us up on that book and on the books, and James Roberts and Alex Milne are killing on More Than Meets the Eye, and obviously Andrew Griffith's doing a great job on Robots in Disguise. I couldn't be happier to work with anybody but him.
Literally,
as I said the word Andrew Griffith, he just came online on Skype, so his name popped up on my screen.
It's like little cube.
He is awoken.
Yes.
Speak of the devil.
So first of all, I want to talk about some of the stuff that we saw at BotCon. Of course, not everybody got to see all the pictures and things, but we're a little interested in July because we hear there's going to be Dinobots and Decepticons and things going on. What if anything can you tell us? I mean, obviously our listeners weren't at the panel, so what can you tell us about it?
July is Decepticon month, so we've got in More Than Meets the Eye, we finally meet the Decepticon Justice Division, which James has been teasing out, I think, since Bullets in the Wreckers trade, last end of the Wreckers trade for anybody that doesn't religiously follow Transformers. So we'll finally see who they are. They're sort of the ultra loyalists to Megatron. They're they're the ones that go after the Decepticons that go bad. Like they're the sort of the worst of the worst. If you're an Autobot or a rogue Decepticon, so we'll finally get a chance to see them. Meanwhile, in More Than Meets the in Robots in Disguise, the one I write, Turmoil, who was in the Drift one shot and the Drift briefly in the Drift Limited series. And was presumed dead, is back, and he's on Cybertron, and Bumblebee and Metalhawk and the whole group has to figure out what to do with this really terrible Decepticon showing up. Do they let him in? Do they treat him like a normal Cybertronian? But I think the big news really is August is Dinobot month. That's going to run across all the Transformers books, including Regeneration 1. And it's not an event that you have to read every, you know, it doesn't start in one and go to the next. Obviously, Regeneration 1 takes place in a totally different universe. It's part of that just actually worked out really coincidentally. you're not going to believe this, but they like Grimlock in Regeneration 1.
Really? I can't imagine why.
I don't know.
Simon Furman kind of likes the character, so he's showing up. So we'll have Regeneration 1. We'll have Action Master Grimlock taking center stage. Meanwhile, in the regular IDW Comics universe, Grimlock's going to be coming back. We haven't seen him since he disappeared from Garrus 9. That was about... It was about 5 years in continuity. I think it was a little bit less in real time. So we haven't seen him for a very long time. We don't know what he's been up to, and he's going to be showing up in More Than Meets the Eye. And meanwhile, the rest of the Dinobots are going to be returning to Cybertron and Robots in Disguise, and Ironhide's going to be leading them into the Cybertronian wilderness. So we'll finally get a chance to explore what's going on outside of Iacon and the farther reaches of Cybertron.
Excellent. Oh, well, I mean, obviously we're looking forward to it. So I did just get a chance. I've been so busy after BotCon, but I did get a chance to catch up on Robots in Disguise. I'm kind of interested. I mean, is it your intention? I mean, was it your intention to sort of create sort of almost like a political drama and do that in like the Transformers world? Or what is your sort of your vision for Robots in Disguise? I mean, what are you thinking on it?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a political story, but it's political in the sense that, like, I don't know, maybe Game of Thrones is political. There isn't a lot of people walking down hallways. Hopefully it isn't a lot of people walking down hallways and talking.
No.
And,
not that.
No.
it's a lot of fighting.
There's less nudity as well, I think.
In Game of Thrones, they're all naked.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. Fair point, sir.
We're one of the few comics out there that has 100% nudity ratio. the idea is sort of what happens after the good guys win. How do you win a battle that's lasted for 4 million years? There's no easy ways to maintain a victory and still be the good guys. You know, and Bumblebee is sort of the key figure in that he's essentially the good guy. He's the nice guy who's sort of put into this position where he has to do not nice things, you know, for the good of everybody. Doors are moving behind me. the question is how far do you go, you know, for good?
Prowl is definitely, you know, sort of crossing that line. I mean, he's gone into a whole, you know, different thing. I have to say the death of the Constructicons was just a little, I was like, wow, we went there. So, I mean, so bravo to that, though. I mean, it's been...
I genuinely thought issue 4 was where everybody had turned against me.
Well, definitely, it's definitely raised a lot of hackles.
Yeah. All around. I do have one question about, of course, since you're kind of senior editing everything, More Than Meets the Eye, I've been really interested in as well. Is it the Odyssey? Because that's been my question from the beginning, because it's like I got to the end of the first series, like, oh my God, it's the Odyssey. Is it really, or am I just making that up?
I don't think you're far off. I mean, it's a quest. It's a mm-hmm. quest narrative. I mean, James... You kind of have to ask James Roberts, the writer, about some of his influences, but that's definitely the sort of thing James thinks about. You know, not to sound too lofty with this stuff, but I think both of us had goals that would be more than just, you know, big robots fighting. Although we both want there to be big robots fighting because it is a key part of Transformers. But in addition to that, you can kind of take it, you know, hopefully further than a lot of Transformers comics have gone before. Not there haven't been some you know, great ones in the past, but, you know, both of us just want to really, you know, push it, try something new. And I think, mine's really sort of grounded and centered on this one location. James is really taking him on this voyage through the galaxy. We'll see pieces of the past and the future and all these things as we keep going. So yeah, I mean, the two books really have a different feel. I think James, you know, the Odyssey is not far. You know, it's not far from what he's going for, from what we're going for with it.
I'll take that as a yes. Okay.
I wondered, was that a conscious choice when the books were being mapped out or later in the process? Was it a conscious decision to have one that is very much the out there voyaging, exploring the world, and one that is the very insular, totally limited to Cybertron thing, and to deliberately explore these two things in two separate books? Or did they just sort of happen that way? I mean, was it planned out or...?
Yeah, I mean, that was the idea was, you know, okay, there's one group that's going out into space and one group that's staying on the planet. We'd been focused on Earth for so long, we wanted to kind of move away from being on Earth for a while. And there's sort of two ways you can not be on Earth, which is be somewhere else or be traveling through space. So, yes, and then I think James and I approached this stuff from some different angles. Like, we come at this from different paths, different histories with the Transformers and different ways of looking at the stuff. I think we kind of arrive at a similar place because I mean, I really love what James does, and he tells me he likes what I do. I don't know.
It couldn't be just because you're like the editor, right? It's not like
we talk. We usually have pretty long conversations every couple weeks. You know, just kind of talk about what. You're like writer, like as a writer to writer kind of thing. This is the editor writer, you know, relationship. Just kind of figure out what we want to do, where we're going to go with things. So we talk about the stuff. We kind of, you know, there's definitely pieces that he's you know, thrown my way that have become major parts of Robots in Disguise. So there's, you know, there's a little bit of the DNA of each of us kind of seeping into the other books. But what really keeps them separate, I think, is that we just come at them differently. Mm. And I think the genesis was deliberate in having one going off and one staying behind. And I think there would have been more deliberate course correction if we'd started to do things too similarly, but that just didn't really happen.
Cool. Well, I know Nicole just has a burning question. So
I do, but it's not about Transformers.
Okay. Outrageous.
When you worked for Marvel, I want to ask you a question because you were the original editor of one of my favorite comics, the Dark Tower series. Oh. And I was wondering, how did you get involved with Stephen King? What kind of permissions did you have to deal with him? I mean, everyone knows Stephen King. So what was your involvement with him?
It's kind of an interesting story. The senior editor on the book was Ralph Macchio. We basically just listed our actual positions in the company. So, like, I was editor, but like Ralph was a big, you know, big part of the editing process. And then Nicole Boos, now I can't remember if she was Nicole Wiley at the time, was associate editor.
Right here.
Okay. The three of us were editorially. But how it actually started?
She's Boos.
Okay.
At that time.
Going after Stephen King was something that I think Joe Quesada had wanted to do for a really long time, and he over the years had made some inroads with with King's agent and King's people and stuff. And finally, we sort of got it set up where we were going to pitch on doing this Dark Tower series. So Joe wanted it to be, you know, all out. We were going to get some of the best people we could and not make it just a regular adaptation or a spin-off book that you see in a lot of comic companies. So we initially Joe wrote an outline of, I think it was like 4 pages. He just broke down the opening scene of, or the opening sentence or paragraph of The Gunslinger with a Roland running through the desert with the Man in Black mm-hmm. pursuing. So Joe wrote a plot. It was a 4-page plot, and we sent it over to Jay Lee. And the idea was that Jay was going to pencil it. Richard Isenov was going to digitally paint it. At the same time, Jay was going to ink it, and then Isenov would color it more traditionally. So we'd have sort of 2 versions to show at this presentation that we'd arranged to have, you know, King and his agent Ralph Vincenzia show up. Was it Ralph? Yeah. Jay turned in the, you know, pencils. They were really cool. Richard painted the first page, and we were like, oh, no, that's it. Don't ink them. That's exactly how it's got to look. It's beautiful. So we got that done. Chris Eliopoulos lettered it up. We had him print it out on a big 10x15, you know, board to take this presentation. And this is, again, this is just, this is the pitch meeting. There's no contract signed. King and his agent come into the conference room. And it was me, Ralph, Nicole, Dan Buckley, Joe Quesada, Tom Marvelli, who was the head of creative services at Marvel. You know, just a bunch of people kind of sitting around this conference table. We show King these pages, and he's looking at them. And I think Joe said something like, okay, so now these are just sample pages. We won't actually use these. And King's like, no, these are the first four pages of the book. Then he turned the page, and here's what happens. Hey, he lays out 30 issues right there. He was really awesome. He was great. He's like kind of exactly how you hope Stephen King is. Like, he's a really nice guy. He surrounds himself with really cool people.
I would not been able to talk in that meeting and be like, oh my gosh, it's you.
Those were the first pages of the Dark Tower book. That was the course we took for the next 30 issues. I only worked in I worked in the first story, and then I kind of helped break down the story in the second one. But that was how it went. It went really smoothly.
It's gorgeous. I love it. It's one of my favorite trades I put together is that first one. It's like beautiful. I love it. You guys did a great job. It's my favorite story of all time. So the series of books, it's like, this is great.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, look, we're really aware we're going to get a lot of people who had never read comics before or hadn't read comics for a really long time. So we wanted to have something that was going to be accessible to them, but not in a way a lot of things wind up. When you say being accessible, a lot of times you just wind up with the most basic storytelling. And we wanted something that was going to be very unique and comics-y. And I think Jay and Richard really delivered that.
Well, it's what got me back into comic book reading. So congratulations.
Oh, that's awesome.
Now I'm doing a podcast about comic books.
So now I thank you.
Awesome.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that.
So I know you don't have a lot of time, but we want to talk real quick about Regeneration 1, because, of course, the .5 came out with Free Comic Book Day yesterday.
Yep.
I had a great Free Comic Book Day, so I hope you did as well. So Regeneration 1, this is kind of something that maybe is a little bit different, because this really came about as a large part from fan reaction. I mean, were you surprised by the fan reaction to try to get this done?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, Simon's writing affected a lot of people. When I was a kid, I grew up and I read the Transformers. I mean, I bought the first Transformers off the stand. I love the series, but I probably liked what Larry Hama was doing on G.I. Joe more. And like that, you know, I was one of those people that stuff really affected me, the Silent issue and this second year of it where Cobra started getting really complex. And the fact that in the G.I. Joe comics, like all these guys were Vietnam vets and they were all really, they were sort of damaged people who would go off on these killing missions and they knew they weren't all going to make it back. It was really different than the cartoon. And I love the Transformers comic, but I stopped reading it at a certain point. And I was living in England for a while, and my friends there that were about the same age that would be talking about G.I. Joe if we were in the U.S. would be talking about Transformers. And I kind of, I was kind of surprised. I mean, I guess, it translates a little better across across countries and stuff than G.I. Joe does, maybe. But then a friend of mine, Daniel Merlin Goodbury, was like, oh, you've got to check out Simon Furman's stuff. So I did, and I was the first issue I read. This is in, like, my mid-20s, this wasn't that long ago, cosmically speaking. It was the one with Ratchet and Megatron fused together, and they've just come out of the teleporter device, and they're kind of walking down the hallway screaming and begging to be killed. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. If I was like 10 when I saw this, this would have changed my life. And I think that's the effect that Simon's stuff had on a lot of people, that were reading it at that time, or that read it later. I mean, I love that stuff, and I have absolutely no nostalgia for it. I just really, really enjoy it. I think knowing that, and knowing knowing how the Joe fans responded so positively to having Larry continue the G.I. Joe story with Real American Hero, it's not exactly surprising, but the number of people and the excitement about it was certainly impressive.
I mean, do you think it's, not to ask a hard question, but I mean, do you think it's any bit of a risk, in a sense? Because, I think there's a lot of vocal fans who are really, excited about getting it. But do you think there's any bit of a risk of trying to, it's sort of like catching lightning in a bottle again, maybe, or something like that? I don't feel that way because I read it and I love it. But, just kind of as a company question, I guess, from an editorial standpoint, maybe, or...
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. There's every... I can say this because I've read the next issues and I know this doesn't happen, but there's every chance in the world that you'd come in and do something that just doesn't live up to the legacy. Or, I mean, even worse, you're not only fighting against the actual comics that came out, but people's memories of it. You know, you're sort of up against people's childhood. It's sort of the unwinnable situation of, like, Star Wars prequels or something that, like, you have people that have been thinking about Star Wars literally as long as they've lived, and there's no way you're going to be able to go up against not only the actual quality of the movies, but but every single thought that person has ever thought in their entire life. There's that danger. You know, can you go home again? Can you come back and do something? I think Simon, Andrew, Stephen Baskerville, Ed Wildman, the artist, I mean, those are the exact same three people who were writing and drawing the issue 80, and they're all back. And they really brought their A-game to it, and it's not like those guys haven't been doing Transformers over the years either. So it's not like they're coming in and just hitting the ground, you know, without having done this for 20 years. That is definitely a risk. It was definitely something I was worried about. But then I think what actually has happened with the book is pretty extraordinary. I think Simon's not one to not take risks. Mm-hmm. And I think as the story goes on, it isn't a nostalgia fest. It's very much, okay, here's what happens after that. You know, here's you had issue 80, but here's what happens next, and it's not what you thought was going to happen, and you know, some of it's pretty terrible. terrible for the characters, not qualitatively terrible.
Well, and he said dead is dead as well. I think that was the thing that really, I think, captured a lot of attention at the panel as well. And when, you know, he mentioned that, you know, that was always the thing where it's like you'd have someone die and then they came back, but he said this is going to be the definitive. I mean, is that... I don't know. I mean, that kind of blows me away a little bit because it's like, that sounds scary and yet exciting. Because we are in a different world now. I mean, I like that, you know, as far as IDW, they've made, you know, several mentions that they understand that, you know, you're walking that line where it's like you want to try to recapture what happened 20 years ago, and yet, you know, comics have changed in 20 years. People's expectations have changed. So how do you, you know, meld those two things? I will say after reading the point five, it's like, oh, that's how you do it.
The point five is probably the most. I mean, it's intentionally a recap of the series, so mm-hmm. like in that sense, it's the one that really looks back the most. The rest of it doesn't really look back that way. You know, it keeps moving things forward. I think the series really gets better and better. I'm glad to hear you like the 80.5. I just think that's not the peak.
Oh no, and I think it's just. I think it was the right way to set it up, you know, to really kind of to lay that foundation. I mean, it's one of those deals where, and I think I may have mentioned this to Chris Triplett yesterday, but it's like, I knew what was going to happen, like, after the first page, and I liked that I knew that. Mm. You know, it felt comfortable. It's like, okay, I'm like, I understand this world, and it's going to be messed up and awesome. And I like that. So I think Furman, was that an offhand comment, or true? He scripted out to, like, 20 issues or more. For this, I mean, do you know about how far out you're?
The goal is issue 100.
So awesome!
Yeah,
that would be great.
And I think that's, you know, that's a big part of what he means when he says dead is dead. We're aiming for an ending with this. You know, there's something that, like, it's all set up where we're going and what Simon's doing. I mean, there's plenty of room for Simon to riff on things, I think, as he goes on. But.
Talking about goals, is it your goal to kill off more Transformers than Simon Furman?
It'll be a race. don't leave James out. James isn't innocent in this either.
No. And that's why I kind of made that Odyssey reference as well, because it's like, man, it's like we're killing everybody. We're killing somebody at least every issue. You know,
James has only killed guys who don't have toys. An important distinction to make.
Oh, well, John, we know we want to let you go. We thank you so much for coming. We're really excited. like you said, Robots in Disguise, World of the MCI have just been great. We're looking forward to getting Regenerations in our hand. That's going to come July, and then we've got Decepticons in July and Dinobots in August. So lots of awesome stuff coming out of Transformers IDW. We are looking forward to it. John, thanks again. Thanks so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for supporting us, and congratulations on 100 episodes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, that was awesome! Hooray!
So, awesome. So, again,
that, really?
Yeah, I know. It's like we have to do the rest of the show now. So.
Who cares about Avengers in the comic from this week?
No, that was great. So we want to thank John again for coming on. That was super, super cool. I hope to do that more often. I like to have people on live and talk about stuff and hopefully get your questions as well, which the killing more people did.
Dark Tower.
So yeah, and you got to talk Dark Tower as well. So that's great. So awesome. So anything else that we want to talk about out of Free Comic Book Day? Because we kind of were getting in that direction and didn't really get there.
Let's see.
Well, anybody that's of interest, I guess, or of note.
I mean, the major thing that happened. Well, did we read DC's? The new 52?
I have it in my hand. I haven't
read
it.
I didn't read it.
I mean, it's pretty mega colossal.
Really?
Is this the one that's got the hooded lady, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't read that. I need to read that.
Pandora, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, if you haven't read it, I don't want to spoil it for you. Sitting there, but...
I really don't care if you want to just spoil it.
I'll read it.
Go ahead, yeah.
Okay, well, it's about introducing the Trinity of Sin. Now, we'd heard about this Trinity War that DC is going to do next year. And, of course, the word Trinity in conjunction with DC immediately conjures up Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. But this introduces the Trinity of Sin, which is a trinity of sinners from early in man's history who are condemned by... They're not given any names, but it seems to be the six gods and Shazam. There's seven of these deities, and one is called the Wizard, and then there are six others. And I'm assuming, and the Wizard has the lightning bolt on his chest, so I'm assuming it's the Wizard and the six deities. But that's not. One of them is clearly Japanese. One of them is Egyptian. One of them seems to be Native American. One of them is wearing a kilt, so I'm assuming it's a Celtic god. So who knows? Who knows? Anyway, that's not the point. Trinity of Sin. Pandora is one of them. She is the historical Pandora.
She
opened the box and released evil into the world. It is the identities of the other two that are the crazy shit. One of them is the Phantom Stranger.
Ooh.
The backup in Justice League number 6, I think it was, hinted at this. But I'm sure a lot of people will be angry at giving the Phantom Stranger a definitive origin when the whole point of him has been that his history is supposed to be mysterious. But it's not been fully spelled out here. But basically, his greed has forever darkened the world, and he's been condemned to walk the earth as a stranger to man, as a witness to what greed can do. But people had kind of figured he was coming anyway based on the backup. It's the identity of the third one, which is going to blow the roof off the internet, you know. He gets no name, but he is a red-haired man who defies the authority that these wizards claim. Says, do what you wish to me, but if you do not kill me, I will rise to power again, and you will fear my name as the world does. And the gods tell him that he will forget his name, and he will forget his identity, and as they say this, his mouth closes over, and the features disappear from his face as he is condemned to forever question his identity.
Oh God!
Oh my God!
Yeah.
So yeah. That's going to set the internet to explode for two reasons.
Making the question magic, for starters.
Three reasons, then. Make the question come back, one. Make the question magic, two. Make the question not...
Renee Montoya, yeah.
This is a free comic, and I didn't pick it up because I thought it was...
I didn't even know any of that was in this. I thought this was just a simpler of like books that are coming out. I was like,
Let's not forget DC's last Free Comic Book Day offering was a reprint of the second chapter of a 4-year-old story.
Correct.
To tie in with the Green Lantern movie. Yeah.
Oh my God, I have to read this now.
And that's not the whole story, even. There's more here.
Oh, God.
In which Pandora orchestrates a break-in at the Red Room at Star Labs, where they keep all of the mysterious alien tech. Where you're introduced to the Black Room at Argus, the Steve Trevor's organization, where they keep all the mystic artifacts, where she reclaims her skull. There's a box. There's a box in the room, and from the box, she removes this, like, three-eyed metallic skull, and I'm not clear on whether or not the skull might actually be the box, like the literal Pandora's box.
Pandora's box, yes.
And then in the course of that, we also, Steve Trevor gets a copy of that mysterious author's book on the Justice League delivered to him, foreshadowing what's coming in the Justice League. And over in the Red Room, a monitor that they have that's never worked before, the monitor machine they call it, gives them a brief glimpse of Earth 2. And then we jump to the near future, in which Batman, with the skull on a strap around his neck, is fighting Green Lantern, who is not Hal Jordan. And then
Kyle? Super, is it Kyle?
He kind of looks like
John Stewart, Donnie.
Yeah, he might be black. It's hard to tell from the color.
Kind of looks black. Like black. Yeah.
And then Superman comes swooping in with a big stone column to smash into Green Lantern, and we see the Justice League is at war, and Element Woman is there, and Vibe is there, and Hawkman and Green Arrow and the Atom, and can't tell if it's Black Adam or just Shazam's new look is there, fighting being possessed by Dead Man. Yeah. So yeah, if you didn't pick it up,
the Shan.
huge image by Jim Lee too. Look at
it's a
four part eightfold. Yeah.
Why didn't I pick this up? Oh my gosh.
Oh, I need to change my pants.
I just thought it was going to be like a recap of what was happening on the 52.
That is like a polar.
Thought this was going to be throwaway. I need to read this now.
It is literally the polar opposite of their offering last year. Wow.
See, I thought like the big thing was going to be this Avenger Age of Ultron, because it's like a whole friggin' issue.
Yeah, but it's just a reprint of. See, Marvel's done that this year. Marvel has just
they went the other way.
Reprinted, yeah, they just reprinted Avengers number 12.1.
Oh, that's what they did. Oh, I was thinking this was new. Oh, crap.
No, that's a reprint of Avengers 12.1, Bendis and Hitch.
So, wait, do you guys know if this will be up on Comixology?
I wish they did the comics of Gumball.
I love my point, my 80.1, and I've got to send it to XB because I told them I would. So I'm like, man. Oh, well. Anyway.
Yeah, so that's the other big thing out of Free Comics.
Wow, so that's huge. Okay, glad I missed that, damn it.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. On the one free one that I got about Elvis, Elvis was the fifth Beatle in it.
Oh,
Pete
well.
Pete Best?
Man, yeah. Cool.
Pete Best isn't in it, sorry.
No, Elvis was Pete Best.
Oh, well,
he was the original drummer.
In disguise.
John Barber was on our show. That's kind of cool.
That is
yeah, maybe kind of distracted from that there with that DC bomb.
Huh. Anyway, cool. All right. Well, I guess we should get to reviews since it's about that time. Let's start then with Chris Triplett. And are people going to have to take a drink?
No, because I'm not reviewing a comic with Spider-Man.
There's no Spider-Man in your comic, sir?
What?
Oh, man.
Unless they made, like, a version of him on Earth 2 or something.
Do you know how many people were, like, sitting there ready, and this went, aw.
I disappointed them. But, you know, if it counts, I'll say that, hey, Amazing Spider-Man was pretty awesome this week.
I did take half a sip. I don't know.
You get a drink for
that. You get a drink for that.
It was a good
what are you going to be reviewing?
World's Finest. It's a number one. Yeah, I couldn't resist reviewing a number one this week. There was a lot of good stuff that came out too, but I was like, man, I need to do a number one. I need to do something different. Can't be Spider-Man. It's got to be something different.
Well, you know, we're giving DC the edge on the reviews on the individual books this week because, you know, they're trailing behind as far as the multimedia wins go this week.
Yeah, yeah, really. They need a little bit of help.
Marvel's going to take over the end of the show.
Marvel gets the rest of the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
But But World's Finest, it's that book that is going to be kind of like a team-up book with Huntress and Power Girl, the new 52 versions of them, which are two versions of them.
Did you read that one?
And, whoa. did not read Earth 2. That's the book that I wanted it. I was going to get both of them because I didn't know they were coming out this week. They kind of snuck up on me.
Yeah,
and
they,
I didn't
they
have
dropped like 3/4 of them of all the new launches this week.
Yeah,
I don't
oh
even know what.
My,
you said Dell 8 came out. World's Finest came out.
They handed me my stack, and I was like, I fell over because it was like a it was like a ton. I was like, oh my god, what are all these comics?
Yeah, so, I had weeks worth of books to get. I didn't even get books last week, so I had like a huge stack. Oh my god. Lord. But yeah, it's I was totally surprised. My comic shop sold out of Earth 2. They say they can get me a copy, but if I don't get one soon, I'm going to have to get it on Comixology because after reading World's Finest, I feel like I should have read Earth 2 first.
Ooh. Well, I did give Earth 2 a look over, so here's some important preamble from Earth 2. Earth 2 is, although trailed as the Justice League, Justice Society book, this issue, it doesn't really have them in it, the first issue of Justice. It shows that 5 years ago, Darkseid's forces invaded Earth 2 as well, and they were much more successful there because Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman of that world, who are not, as we thought they might be based on the preview art, Dick Grayson or Donna Troy or whoever, they're just those worlds' versions of the characters, they all died.
Ooh!
Yeah!
Yeah. And
they talked about that in this issue. I was like, yeah. Holy shit, I should have read Earth first.
The Justice Society then is not the old generation of superheroes training the next, but this new take on the Justice Society is that they are the next generation of superheroes. And towards the end of this issue, we meet the young, muscly and buff, young chap versions of Jay Garrick and Alan Scott before they get their powers.
Wow.
So it's pretty interesting. And it's drawn by Nicholas Scott of Secret Six.
Sweet. Nice. And James Robinson's writing, right? That's
yes, and it's the good James Robinson.
Yay, so it's not bad James Robinson, though. We were really worried about that.
Yeah,
I
love JSA James Robinson, not so much, you know, Arsenal's missing his arm James Robinson.
Well, you know, as a first issue, it's surprising in how little it features of what's supposed to be the actual cast of the book, but it's definitely an immediately interesting hook. And it does lead pretty much not directly story-wise, but setup-wise into World's Finest here.
Yeah, cool. Well, this book is – the big draw for me is it's George Perez. I love me some George Perez. I did not know, though, that he was not the only artist going into that. I didn't know. But Kevin Maguire is also doing art on it.
Could you ask for a better team-up of – I mean, my God. Works. I mean, George Perez and Kevin Maguire.
Yeah, it works. It really looks well together. The art complements each other. I mean, when I was reading through – at first, I mean, I had to think for a second when I got to the part where Kevin Maguire was doing the art, and I thought – that's not George Perez, and then I had to go back to the cover, then I had to go back to the first, you know, page, and I had to look at it, and I was like, oh, okay. But yeah, like, it sort of starts off with George Perez, and he, you know, starts you off, and then, like, somewhere in the middle, Kevin Maguire takes over. And basically what's going on in the issue is I think it's like taking place today, you know,
it's specifically coming off the back of the Huntress miniseries. Because Paul Levitz just got done writing that. Nobody was quite sure what was going on in that. She was Helena Bertinelli in that. Karen Starr had been introduced in Mr. Terrific. But there was no sign of her being, you know, Power Girl. And then I think it was at the end of the Huntress miniseries. Swoop, in comes Power Girl. There's a reference to what she's been doing in Mr. Terrific. Turns out, here they are, these two people. And then World's Finest starts.
Yeah. And like, it kind of starts like today, and they're like having a dinner and talking about what's going on and what they've been up to. And they kind of get into the, you know, they're not, you know, from this Earth. They are from Earth 2. And they've been there for a while. I think it said they've been there for 5 years.
Yes, they were blasted. Like. They were blasted through from the. They were Earth 2's Robin and Supergirl, and they have been blasted through in the same fatal final explosion that took out their mentors and Darkseid's forces into Earth 1, where they have reshaped their new superhero identities.
Yeah, and in this world, they kind of, like, started off, and I think Huntress like hacked Bruce Wayne's bank account and stole some money. Money that she thought, well, he's not going to miss it. You know, he's got plenty of money.
She's got the Batman credit card.
A bat credit card?
The bat card. Don't leave home without
it.
Question, though, is she Batman's daughter from the Earth 2 universe? Is that – because, like, they
said – Well, they said that she's Robin, but I don't know that they've
– Well, I think she might be – she is Helena Wynn, I think, isn't she? I don't know. They establish in this one that Helena Bertinelli is an alias anyway that she was using in the Huntress miniseries. Yeah. I didn't read this closely enough to know.
So
she was
blasted. So her and Power Girl, who were Robin and
Supergirl
and Earth 2, were blasted from Earth 2 to Earth 1. So now they're on Earth
5
1.
Years ago.
Yeah. 5 years ago, they were in like this fight with Apocalypse invading, and they talk about how the Justice League died. You know, the main guys died. And in the fight, there's this explosion, and it like knocks them out of that world into our world, and they like land like on a beach. That's when like the Kevin Maguire art kicked in, which was good because like you had them like today, George Perez, and then it kicked in with the Kevin Maguire art showing them as Supergirl and Robin going and, you know, trying to help out with the situation with Apocalypse, and then the explosion which rocks them into our world. And once they kind of get their bearings and figure out what's going on, I think Huntress is basically, you know, we got to start over. You know, she's like accepted it. We're not going home. But Power Girl, she's like, nah, we got to find a way. So, like, when she steals the money, Huntress decides, you know, I'm going to, like, redo my identity. I'm going to be Huntress now, and I'm going to, you know, create this identity, and we're going to try to do good here. And she's trying to build up that urban legend of Huntress. While Karen, you know, Power Girl, she goes and she starts this huge company, and just kind of like how she was, like, before. You know, wasn't she, like, the head of, like, some sort of multi super corporation and all this stuff, except for the whole point of it is she's trying to find a way to get back home. She's like buying up all these companies.
So that's why she's kind of hanging out with like Mr. Terrific and stuff to try.
I think, cause like he's like an expert on you know, something that they can maybe help him build a machine or something to open.
They need Scott Free. That's who they need. Yeah. Where is Scott Free in all of this? That's
where
Huntress has been a superhero maybe for the last 5 years, she hasn't. It kind of seems like she's retired and she's just kind of doing the secret identity thing. But then in this issue, one of her recent acquisitions, one of her recent companies gets attacked and it's getting destroyed. So Huntress goes in with her to kind of, you know, help some people and stop the bad guy. And it turns out that Power Girl's been having them to she's got something there, and she's been having it developed, and it's a new costume. It's the Power Girl identity, and she puts it on, and you kind of get like, hey, it's Power Girl now. Which I didn't notice this like in the promotional art for the book, because you know we got the new design, and we talked about it. We didn't talk about it on the show. You know, they got rid of the, you know, the circle, the circles,
the boobs. They got rid of the cleavage.
Yeah, no boobs.
Trust me, it's just
there's still boobs. There's just no boob window.
Yeah. No, let me just say, in this comic book, though, you get plenty of her.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yes.
Really?
Lizzie will cover her up in this.
She goes into the facility, and, you know, she's invulnerable, but her clothes are not. So you can draw a conclusion. She basically looks like She-Hulk after She-Hulk's had a bad day or something.
Yeah.
But,
that's a good way to explain it.
But the point I'm getting to is, like, so when the costume shows up, I didn't even notice, even looking at the cover of it, but the symbol on the suit, it's actually a capital P for Power Girl. I never even noticed.
I thought
it was, like, some sort of a symbol, like maybe like a half Supergirl symbol or something, which it kind of looks like that. It's the same color as the red and the gold, but, yeah, it's like a capital P.
I think I'm going to get a boob window for my T-shirts. I'm just going to cut holes out, so...
No. So, like, they basically, you know, team up and are, like, fighting the bad guy that's breaking into the facility. And I have no idea who this guy is. Maybe he's some classic villain or something. But he's, like, glowing red, and he calls himself Haku. Can you help me out here, Chris McKinley?
Haku.
Doesn't sound familiar.
I mean, that's the staple of it. And the sad thing, really, in this New 52 is really other than Apocalypse, most of the villains that have been
showing up have really been, you know, new things. I mean, I think
that's
even
the idea.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that that's been like the whole through thought has been it's got to be all new stuff. We can't reference old crap. It's all
I don't know that
new
it's
things.
That. I think it's just that building up to the return of major villains.
I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a Brand New Day did, you know?
I hope so. I mean, I hope that's the direction that they're going in. I hope they're not just trying to bring in a bunch of new villains just to do it. Although, Dan Jurgens is more than happy to invent villains out of nowhere. One-off villains? You gotcha. Okay. Anyway,
but
sorry.
I liked the book. I thought the book was fine. But definitely my draw was the art.
Would you say it's the world's finest?
The world's finest art? It is really good. I mean, I don't know if this is George Perez's best.
Help.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. These are two of the best guys working, so.
Yeah.
So maybe it is.
I mean, it's great. I mean, everything in this book looks great. I don't know if it's the best of work of their career, but it's definitely good, and it's good enough for me, and I will continue to buy the book.
All right, so read Earth 2 and then read World's Finest is what you're saying.
I mean, I think so because, it seems like I was missing something when I was reading this. Not as much that it took away from the story. I got the idea because they straight off say, yeah, okay, we're not from this world. What you been up to for 5 years? Oh, I bought a company. What you been up to 5 years? My urban legend and fighting crime. Okay.
Wow.
Far more interesting premise than I ever would have given it credit for. I think it's off to a very good start.
Sweet.
And I think it will be cool to have a basically, you know, like a girls team up book, you know. And I like I know practically nothing about Huntress. So I'm not – I know basically the original origins where she was Batman's daughter and the other Earth and everything, which is about it. But Power Girl – I've always kind of liked Power Girl going back to like JSA, you know, Jeff Johns and even Jim Robinson, you know. It's cool to see Power Girl back, and I hope that this turns out to be a really good book. So I'm going to stick with it.
Sweet.
See what happens.
Awesome. There you go. All right, kids. Get your drinks ready. Here we go.
Yes.
All right, Nicole.
It's time because I am introducing a new number one. Well, there's a reason behind it, because I'm 3 weeks behind on comics. So I went to the store. I'm like, I don't know which one of these are really new or not. And so I picked up one that says new on the shelf. I'm like, okay, I'm reviewing this one. So
there you go. Take a drink, kids.
Yeah. I am reviewing Rex Zombie Killer. Woo! Ooh. It's zombies. Of course I'm going to review it. Hello?
I think somehow that got left off the list. I need to put zombies on the list with ninjas.
Oh, but wait. I will mention blood. There you go.
Oh, well, there you go.
Zombies. There you go. So you got to take two drinks.
All right. Everybody's going to be toasted by the time they get done with Nicole's review.
Yes. That's my evil plan. No, okay. I enjoyed this one because, first of all, it's talking animals. Second, it's zombies. And the reason... Okay, let me go back. It's talking animals that can understand each other. Humans can't understand them. But the very first page, we are introduced to five different animal characters. One of them is Rex. He's our main guy. He is a golden retriever. He's been a laboratory animal that has been injected and trained to be super intelligent. We also have another animal called Kenji, and he is a sign language speaking gorilla. So he is also another lab experiment.
Yeah, you got me interested when you said that. Okay, continue.
Yeah. We also have Brutus, who has been a pit bull who's been battered and bruised, and he's been, you know, and he's had a rough life. He's the street guy in this group. So then we have the cute little cuddly Buttercup, who is a corgi mixed dog. And
this isn't sounding like zombies. This is sounding like
not yet, not yet, not yet.
This sounds like We Three or something.
Wait, well, I mean, I think this movie came out. Wasn't that fat guy in it? And I think he worked at a zoo. I think.
Oh, the zookeeper.
Yeah.
No. Well, so Buttercup, you know, she's the happy-go-lucky little corgi. Oh my gosh, love her. And then you got Snowball, who is the one cat that's lived a little too pampered lifestyle and thinks that everyone should be catering to her. So typical cat. Well, when you turn the page after you get to know your characters, they're in the middle of the zombie apocalypse, and they've all come together in, like, this grocery store, and the zombies are after them because, well, zombies need food, too. And you come to realize that these
animals... And they went to the grocery store?
They need food.
Milk. Bread. M&M's.
You know, the animals see food, and they just sniffed out the animals.
I'm happy to say that even in the zombie apocalypse, it's going to be the same as if when it snows, you go to the grocery store.
Everybody's going to the grocery store. Oh, my God, the zombies are coming. We need bread, and we need milk.
Well, okay, so you see you see Rex. He actually gets the gang together to get these zombies destroyed. How? He gets them all round up to go towards Kenji, the gorilla, who has a baseball bat and just beats the zombies.
Oh my God.
That works.
Can the animals talk to each other? Do they?
The animals are talking to each other. The animals understand each other. But then Snowball, the cat, is the lookout. She doesn't care for her job, but she figures, I've got to earn my food, so.
Cats.
But, I know.
Am I right, folks?
And then, well, then you go into their back history after they've conquered this little trial. So you get to see what happened to each one of them, how they became a team. Because this is 56 pages. It's a comic book of 56 pages, so you get really into it.
The whole thing. I forgot this wasn't a free comic.
No. Yeah, yeah. It's 56 pages, and the art's really good in it so far.
I was away for a second there. Did we get a?
Oh, yeah. This is created by Rob Anderson, and artist is Dafu Yu, colorist is Kevin Volo. It's put out by Big Dog Ink.
It's never heard of any of these things.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's very new, and well, their next little trial.
I just imagine that one day, like, these guys were sitting around baked, and they were watching Walking Dead, and then the commercial for the Zookeeper movie came on, and they're like, dude, that would be awesome! What, man? No, we have, like, talking animals, and they're, like, fighting zombies, man! Like, in a fucking grocery store! Oh, dude.
A bat, man.
We'll have a gorilla with a bat. And, oh, can you just see? I can see it, man. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Exactly. No, because the next little trial is they're trying to find the Rex's, scientist who worked with him, but she's been captured and taken to Nevada. So they're on their way to Nevada. On their way, Brutus, the pit bull.
Like they're driving?
No, they're walking.
Oh, okay.
That movie.
Milo Notice.
Well, I was hoping for something slightly less horrific, but you know the one, the Disney one.
Any Disney one?
Oh, it's a Disney one. That narrows it down.
Any one of those.
So poor Brutus gets captured by a motorcycle gang and is put into a pit bull fighting ring.
Oh, God.
It's, wow.
That is Milo Notice.
God.
So they come up with this crazy plan. I mean, they have to go and try to find him, and they do. And they come up with this plan for the little corgi, little Buttercup, because she's a herding dog. So she does her little job, and she's so proud she gets to be part of the team. She rounds up the zombies to go attack the motorcycle gang, and so they can free all the other pit bulls.
That's
the incredible journey.
So let me get this straight. They attacked people with zombies.
Yes, they did.
Wow.
This is the inverse Milo Onotis.
It's just so funny because, well, then you get your backstory of Buttercup, how she was raised as a puppy mill puppy. And so her mom, poor little mother, is just worn out from all this puppy birthing. But before her mom passes away, she teaches her a fun little song. So you see Buttercup singing along while she's rounding up the zombies. So, come on, that is so funny.
So these are sadistic tree hugger weed smoking people is basically what we've come up with. That is, dude.
I mean,
screw those people. that don't love the environment and puppies. We're going to kill them with zombies.
This topic does have a lot of political, you know, intuition into it. Because you see, they're talking about, you know, the animal experiments. They're talking about the puppy mills. They're talking about, you know, what's wrong with the world. And now it's the animals' turn to be the survivors and to, you know, do good in the world. So there's some really funny moments in this. And if you have, you know, smaller kid, not like the smallest kids, but young kids, they would love this. And if you're a fan of animals,
wait a minute. Whoa.
How gory is this?
It's not gory.
No gory?
But no, still, okay, so it's all just like, I don't think I'm panel. I'm just imagining, like, all right, little Timmy, read this comic about people being killed by zombies.
Gorilla is beating zombies to death.
Gorilla is beating
zombies.
It implies it, but I could see, you know, younger maybe, readers. Not really like
maybe you read it along with them and only show them a few pages. Like, and we'll skip that one. Okay.
Show them the page of like the dog, like, you know, seen in or something.
Yeah. God.
There's hardly any blood. They show a bloody collar from one of the dogs that was in the fight, but that's about the majority of the blood. Yeah, but it's a fun little story, and that little corgi, oh my gosh, so dang cute.
So we hope you're horribly drunk at this point.
I had to look at this before I could form any kind of. I mean, like, who is this for?
It's,
you know,
it's
it sounds for, like it's for some for one group of people, but then you're saying like they obfuscate all the violence. They don't show any. It's like,
you know who would love this?
It's sanitized for. I'm like, what is who is this?
You know
for?
Who would love this would be Melissa. I remember her. She was on our show very early.
Yeah, yeah.
And she would. This would be right up her alley. She loves animals. She loves zombies. I mean,
see, it's for people
would,
like.
There you go. So one person would love this.
Like I said, It's fun. There's some really funny moments in it. I'm like, yeah, like to see a corgi running rounding up zombies while singing a happy tune. Come on, who wouldn't want to see that?
I mean, at least he enjoys his work.
On a dog.
Good lord. No,
the thing is, the art is fairly good in it. The colors are great.
The animals are really hard to draw.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what? They actually did a fairly good job, especially when they're trying to make them look like they're speaking. They actually did.
I mean, they're drawn to look like real animals. Are they slightly cartoonified? Or
they're fairly cartoonish, but it's still fairly good. It has like the kind of same kind of feeling as Axe Cop.
Oh, okay. Mm.
Axe Cop
art-wise, yeah. So it has that same kind of appeal to it. If you enjoy Axe Cop, you would enjoy this.
Axe Cop getting a TV series.
Yes,
now.
It is.
I heard about that.
Because I was going to do that in the news, but then we moved off to other things. Yeah.
Is that
we had
like
to talk to John
Adult
Barber.
Swim,
I'm sorry.
Is that Adult Swim or is that on FX or what is that?
I don't know what that's on. I don't know. Offhand. Don't have the info in front of me anymore.
Yeah,
I would say if you enjoyed Axe Cop, this is like a second comic book you would enjoy.
Okay.
It has that same kind of feel and look to it and. Cool. It's just fun. Come on, Buttercup's my new hero.
Okay. Milk.
Bread.
All right. So I'm going to do, like, I think a review and a half here, maybe, but it'll be shorter than actually one review, I think. So we'll see how it comes out on time, because I want to move us along. I really want to talk about Avengers. So one thing I'll talk about is the Regeneration 1, which is the 80.5. This came out as part of Free Comic Book Day. It's 16 pages, so it's not super long. I mentioned when we were talking to John Barber, because we just talked to him on the show live, which was kind of cool. I'm not going to get over that. That was just the coolest thing, if I say so myself. So most of this, it's kind of interesting the way that they've set this up, because really, like you said, this is kind of a sort of a flashback, if you will. There's a lot of things where there's elements of things that you have seen. It's definitely that, you know, a lot of the, you know, big concept Furman, you know, very mythical in its sense.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, there's no illusion. The first page. What is it?
Zero space, the absolute end of everything, where all time and space fold into a perfect singularity.
I wonder how many people that didn't know anything about this picked that up and read that first page and was like, what the what?
What is happening?
With the robots fighting? And
Brian is
going to
hate
a Camaro? And what?
Where's Bumblebee at?
Where's my kid identification character? No. It's all
him getting menaced by the giant purple bat down in the corner there in the pink shirt. What?
So this is intermixed with those elements where it's like things that have happened plus things that are sort of happening, I guess you would say, in what we consider the present, even though Furman's sort of going for this larger, you know, out of time, you know.
Well, it thing. It is the first. I mean, it's literally split into, after the first, aside from the first page and the last page, you get a double page spread of flashbacks, a double page spread of present day, double page flashbacks, present day, and like that all the way through the issue.
But I said that I knew what would happen at the end, at the very beginning, because when you turn that first page and you're really kind of, you know, I guess it's under the third page or fourth, you're kind of on to this deal where, you know, the last Autobot is overseeing the world and, there's sort of this semi-perfect world that's not really a perfect world, where the Autobots and Decepticons are living together in harmony, asterisk. not really. we see that Soundwave is sort of, you know, got this Decepticon resistance group going, which is the sort of the story part, which I'll go through. I mean, the vignettes are really interesting, and they're really well done. The art, you know, is wild, and you can't say enough about that. I mean, if you like the Wildman stuff, I know maybe not everybody's crazy about it, but
it's
like
not everybody's cup of tea. Certainly not after Dreamwave has warped the minds of a generation, and I say that without irony. Yeah. But yeah,
I mean, for what they're going for, it totally works.
Oh god, yeah,
it totally works. So,
I mean, I still think this is still probably the weakest stuff I've seen from Wildman in a long time, and I'm including the original stuff in that. There's just some really wonky stuff. And it's like that scene there of the cars driving. It's like somebody just needs to run a dustbuster over that. What are the little flecks? What is that? Stop that.
Yeah.
You know. But, you know, I'm still not like 100% convinced on this coloring, on that art. Not to knock one or the other.
It's a little too intense, sure. Maybe, for the, yeah.
I think for my money, I would have just loved it if they could have gone full on 1980s.
Yeah. Or if it would have been, yeah, I don't even know how possible. I mean, that is in terms.
Yeah,
of
I don't know if you could even do that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, literally, it would probably be more work to do that than to do this. You know, but Optimus has sort of turned into this like secluded. I mean, they even make the point that like he has his like citadel up on top of a mountain with tons of steps, and you can't fly there. You have to like walk and shit. And he's got Hot Rod as like
in
his
itself is like an extended callback to the original follow-up to G-181, because you know I wasn't too hyped for this. Like I'm ready for it now, you know, and I have been for a while, but back when this was announced I wasn't too hyped for it, because this is the fourth continuation of where G-181 left off.
Yeah, it's not like it hadn't been done. I mean, no. You know,
we had Counting Backwards, we have this, we have Fun Pubs, classic stuff. We have, as far as I'm concerned, the real thing, which is G2. You know, as far as I'm concerned, we had G-181 before. It was called G2 number
G2,
one.
And that was really good. So, you know.
And before that, the very first thing was a text story in one of the UK annuals called Another Time and Place, which started with Optimus Prime standing in the isolated tower of Nova Point, brooding about the future.
Well, and, you know, and I think, though, for, like, those of us that haven't read that or weren't a part of that.
Oh,
I mean,
no, I'm just saying, check the reference, that's all.
Yeah, so, you know, so that's cool. But anyway, he's sort of, like, yeah, secluded and brooding, and, like, Cup and Ultra Magnus say, hey, by the way, we've got this resistance thing, we want to go kick their ass, is that cool? And he's like, no. No, it's really not. Hot Rod will show you out. Thanks, though.
Truly, there is no sentence that sums up Marvel Comics Optimus Prime more than no.
No. Yeah.
It's good to see 21 years hasn't mellowed him any.
Yeah. No.
No. You undo that. No, that would be guilt and no.
No.
Interspersed with bouts of berserker rage because of all the thing that he's just had to go through.
Yeah.
Oh, God, so, Ratchet, why?
Hey, Fire Charms.
Oh, Ratchet, we'll never get over that. Hey, FireCons, though, so that's fun.
Yeah, there's that.
yeah, so Soundwave basically, and again, we have more vignettes, but Soundwave does exactly what I thought was going to happen at the beginning of this that I didn't know how. I'll just spoil it. They kill the last Autobot. And
oh
I was
God!
Like, oh, no.
He was such a rich and viable character. I knew so much about.
But that's the thing. It's like...
I know. His whole point is to be mysterious and unknown. So
It's like, that's why I say it's like, I knew what was going to happen as soon as I turned the first page because it was like, oh, yeah, the last Autobot. Wow, that doesn't show up ever again. Oh, I guess they're going to have to kill him. Oh, they killed him. Cool.
I'm kind of surprised that they did it in a comic book. Are they going to something?
No, probably not.
Because this is like something that, like, if you're going in to 81, I think you're going to want to read this first.
If the very first page of 81 is that scene again of the last Autobot exploding, you're pretty much okay.
Yeah, I think they'll cover that too.
Yeah.
But Megatron's probably going to, obviously, I think he's going to come back in this. And I mean, Furman even said
That might be his first chance to actually do something in Marvel Comics continuity.
Furman, though, one of the things that he did say in the IDW panel is that a lot of people are going to hate him about Megatron. So I'm like, that makes me even more excited because I'm almost
I don't know
like
what he could possibly do to Marvel Comics Megatron to make people hate him. Marvel Comics Megatron's a bloody joke. He finds the fact spent the intervening million years. Crazy.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure what Furman meant was is that they're gonna hate him.
That's what I mean, Furman. Yeah, I don't know what he could possibly do to Megatron to make the readership hate him, or at least I should say the readership that remembers what Megatron was like in the Marvel comics.
What was he? Did he do something? Did he ever do anything?
He 4-issue miniseries, then overthrown by Shockwave, shoved off a cliff. Trapped in gun mode, lost his mind for an issue or two, used by a small-time human gangster, power shared with Shockwave until he lost his mind and committed suicide.
Yeah, so...
Within the first 2 years of the comic.
Yeah.
And every single successive Decepticon leader after him had many, many, many more successes than he ever did.
Yeah, he really didn't... He's more in name than, in anything.
As the founder. I mean, his rivalry with Ratchet is still one of the most interesting things about the whole original series, and that should be coming back into play, so I'll actively look forward to that.
Yeah. So, anyway, there you go. There's your 80.5 start off.
And it says it's on sale in July, so...
Yeah, so we'll get that in July, along with Decepticons and stuff. I don't know, I guess we didn't mention it, but Autocracy is going to get a printing of its own, so it is going to be printed in book form.
Yes, I will read it then.
I can't remember.
I've read the first issue, but I haven't read anything
read
since.
The first few. I felt so bad. I didn't even talk to what's his last name that's doing the art on it?
Remondelli.
Yeah, I had like several opportunities, and I felt bad. I was just like, I kept trying to think about how am I going to say this? How am I going to say that you're a cool guy and your art would look great on my wall, but I really hate it in comics? I just chose not.
There's no way to say that.
I know he's a super cool guy. Good. Like saw him on the panel and everything, and I don't. It's just not my. It's just not my thing in panel. You know.
Yeah, it looks nice. I think it looks great. It's just I totally get what you're saying.
You know, it's like I would love to see him try to morph his style just a little bit so that it will actually tell the narrative. The only problem I really have with the art is it's not that it's not beautiful. It is. It's really amazing art, and he really works hard on it. But it's hard to get a narrative out of it. It's one of those things where you should be able to lift the text off of the page and be able to get a good idea of what's going on. And I have yet to be able to do that.
It was like the big problem with the designs in Chaos was the fact that he was clearly just lifting mix and match other designs that other art. Some were Don Figg's weird skeletal grimace bots, and some were just the standard Guido bots, and some were other designs, and he just mixed them all in and put his own style on top of it instead of actually creating any kind of unified look for the characters. He's actually going to be at Auto Assembly this year too. I haven't actually read Autocracy, so I don't know what he's done with the designs in that one. And I would say if they at least have a unified sense of design about him, that'll probably remove my major complaint.
Yeah,
but I'll be reading it whenever it hits paperback.
I felt bad. I should have talked to him. I should have at least said something. But
I kind of feel bad because I haven't been reading it. I feel like I'm a bad fan.
No, I think that's okay. I mean, you know.
I'm going to spend money on the book. I'll be fine. I don't want to go
get it. I've got my pre-order on Amazon for it, so.
So, real quick, I want to run through, not the whole thing, just little bits of the Transformers Timelines Fun Pub comic thing.
Say that five times real fast.
Came out. so this is the BotCon edition for the comic. The major story is that you have this blending of the Classics universe and the Shattered Glass universe, where Shattered Glass Ultra Magnus basically in the first scene recreates the death of Ironhide from the movie and shoots him in the head. Yeah, but this is crazy Ultra Magnus who basically wants to take over.
Hey! Does he at any point make note of his ability to deal with something?
He deals with quite a bit, so maybe
But does he say
I can deal with that? No, actually, yeah. I don't think
okay,
so.
Okay, I will give them points for that. I get 1 point.
So Benson, Yee, and Pete wrote this.
Oh dear,
Dan did the art.
Good. Okay, that's good.
So that's okay. The major points I want to hit, I mean, there's a lot of course, you know, fighting and death that goes on in this. One of the most popular toys out of the BotCon was the Junkion Troop Builder set. Those things are going for crazy money, and thankfully I got a set of those, and I loves them. Because I didn't even have the Junkions before this. Somebody had the brilliant idea to turn the Junkions. Of course, the Junkions in this are the Shattered Glass Junkions. And they're painted like the Insecticons, which is brilliant. Because basically their other option would have been the Sweeps. So it's like if you're going to have to make a choice between the Sweeps and the Insecticons, I'll take the Insecticons.
Insecticons are prettier.
Yeah, exactly. But the funny thing is they're the Borg, basically. They sort of infect other Transformers, and they get reformatted into other Junkions.
So are they only Junkions that were infected, or are there like non-Junkions that got infected by this Borg thingy?
I don't know. What happens is initially you see sort of three Junkion infector like serpent things, and they infect Sandstorm, Joyride, and somebody else. I don't even know who that other guy is. And then they turn into Junkions and start fighting, and then Outback and a couple other guys get turned into more Junkions, and that's, you know, it sort of just progresses from there. You know, you get to see, of course, all the BotCon characters in here.
In the BotCon comic, really?
I know. I think we could have surmised that Soundwave is basically a Ninja Turtle.
Which Ninja Turtle? Which one? Is he a party dude?
Yeah, he's basically Michelangelo.
Now, Shattered Glass Sine Wave is pretty cool. Like, I have no particular love for the Shattered Glass universe at all, but Shattered Glass Sine Wave is pretty cool.
Yeah. And
from the text stories, I'm saying. I mean, I don't know what Sinclair and Yee have managed to do with him, but Troop and Sepulx text stories have done very well by him.
Doesn't he have a Zartan tattoo or something?
Yeah.
Called Slither, yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I love him just for that.
Treadshot's so quick. He's actually leading the Decepticons. Barricade asked about Treadshot. He's leading the heroic Decepticons in their fight against Ultra Magnus. But there is a cool fight in here between full-on Pretender Octopunch and Shattered Glass Octopunch. Where,
that is cool.
Huh?
Metal. That is cool.
Yeah, it is. It's really nice, yeah, because even Octopunch's Pretender Octopunch's helmet gets knocked off.
Ooh.
So you actually see his sort of, you know, reptilian almost face as, you know, Octopunch. Shattered Glass Octopunch beats the schnod out of him, basically. Yeah. Sad.
How cool does the headband look in comic form?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, the first image that we got of that was the sort of very lime green looking, you know, mm-hmm. almost yellow swoopy one. And I will say that the colors in this have definitely tweaked it in the direction of the darker green. So it is a much darker green in this which matches, of course, the Fun Pub available headband that you can buy for $5 along with a card to get that will break in like 10 seconds. So, well, I think if you put it on the figure and just leave it, I think it's okay. I don't think you'd want to like take it on and off. I haven't actually touched one, but I've
but don't be transforming that yet.
No. Leave it in robot mode with the headband on. That's all you need. I actually like the look of the Shatterglass Ultra Magnus in this. Of course, they went with the crystal partial head for Ultra Magnus, and now I'm wishing they would have gone like, you know, a gray or something with a little bit of detail, because he actually looks really menacing in the comic, and the figure, you can't tell what it is. It's like red.
The justification for that isn't that I read this, I haven't read the comic yet, but this is because Optimus Prime took his face.
Yeah, he did take his face, and that is in the comic.
Wait, Optimus Prime took his face?
Yeah, there was a whole thing where
he gave him his face.
He gave him his face?
Yeah. Ultra Magnus like usurped Optimus, or tried to in this. He was working with Rodimus, and Optimus. Yeah, there's a whole scene in here where Optimus like rips his face off. So,
wow.
Yeah. And that's why he's got, like, the skeletal face. But there's a whole scene where, like...
He's going to be more known for that than dying. Just wait for it. More known for that than dying. That will be awesome.
For taking faces.
Just taking
or for dying.
Faces, yeah.
But in the end of this, Ultra Magnus takes our Earth into the Shattered Glass universe.
Weird.
And that's where it ends up. And I guess this is supposed to be Zeron at the end, or Primus, maybe. Taking over, I guess you'd call it Shattered Glass, Dark Mount. They call it Bard of Dark Mount.
Straxus,
or it's actually in Scrounge colors.
Colors that Straxus appeared in a German Transformers comic.
Is that what it is?
That's what it is.
Everybody there was speculating it was Scrounge colors. So, by the way,
I've heard that, but no, that's what it is.
So that's basically it. But I do have one more question. Who the fuck is Circuit?
Circuit is a European action master.
Okay. Because the one last thing is, of course, IDW mentioned they're going to be doing that subscription deal. And they went through and they got to Circuit, and we all went, oh, what? And they're like, ask your European friends and they'll know. We're like, okay. Like, two people were like, woo!
Circuit! Yeah! I probably know those guys!
Figure out. See where those guys that yelled are sitting. We need to ask them who that was.
Yeah, he was a repaint of the original Action Master Axer, which is why he's a repaint now of Hunt for the Decepticons Axer.
Okay.
Cool. Uh-huh.
There's logic in there, man.
It's totally not worth reading. The only thing that's cool. is the Junkions, which are the Borg. And they also use, like, computer error codes and stuff to talk. So that's really the only interesting thing. Do you talk some PC? I talk some PC. All right, Chris McFeely, give us our last review so we can get on to Avengers.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm talking about Dial Hitch, or Dial Itch, or however you care to pronounce it.
Dial Hitch.
I know.
Is that a European thing?
No, you're Irish. Yeah, even though you're not drinking, you still sound drunk.
Dial H.
Oh. Yeah, I think that counts as a voice as a part of a review. So there you go, kids.
This is one of DC's new number ones launched this week. It's a revamp of the old Dial H for Hero thing, which was an old game originated back in the 70s, has been revisited and reused several times over in the intervening decades. It's had its own crack at various series, various features, and various comics. The idea is that the original story was about a kid named Robbie Reed who discovered a dial, a rotary dial, like you'd see on a telephone. Remember those kids? Yeah, exactly.
Rotary what?
Was full of mysterious symbols, and if he dialed the symbols that read H-E-R-O, he would be transformed into a superhero.
He now has an iPhone that turns him into a superhero.
Far better. I'll get to it.
Oh, wow.
And he would transform into a different hero, and it would be different heroes every issue. And then in the, I think it was in the 80s series, that they brought in the idea of letter writers would create heroes and would send their ideas into the comic, and the ideas would appear in the comic. And
That's so awesome. I love that.
Yeah, they have interactivity. Of course, they had no claim to the characters. DC took all ownership of the characters. But yeah, so the whole thing is the hero, any different hero, you know. Now this is not any kind of update of Robbie Reed or any of the other characters who appeared in the other series. This is the story of Nelson. Now he does live in Littleville, which is one of those delightful Silver Age town names that you get in comics. This is a guy named Nelson. He's not quite 30 yet, but he is chronically overweight, and he has just had a heart attack. He smokes, he eats unhealthily, he's not living a good life. And he has just been brought home from the hospital by his friend, whose name is not appearing on the page in front of me. Darren. His name is Darren. And, no, unfortunately, after he and Darren have a bit of a disagreement, it's like, you know, get your life together or whatever, you leave me alone, I'll do what I want. You know. But Darren leaves in a huff, and unfortunately, Darren is working for the local crime boss, and he was supposed to be somewhere this evening, but because he had to go and help his friend, he wasn't where he needed to be.
Oops.
And his friend is following to apologize. Nelson is following to apologize when he finds Darren being beaten up by the crime boss's heavies. And he tries to intervene. A single punch lays him out flat. He clatters to the ground. This is in a dingy alley, of course. Where else does this sort of thing happen? And he finds that he smashes into a phone box. And he fumbles, you know, stupor in his server, reaches for the phone, mashes the it is a rotary dial on the phone. He dials something randomly and the character find of 2012 appears. Boy Chimney.
What?
Boy Chimney.
Yeah.
Boy Chimney.
This skeletal Victorian gentleman, complete with a cane. His skin like brick.
How is that any better than killer animals? You know, killing it zombies.
Not done yet. I ain't done yet. Boy Chimney, skin as hard as brick, with smoke spewing constantly from his ever-changing stovepipe hat, which he has.
Oh God, it's in this DC book. I'm seeing it now. It's part of the preview.
I think it might be the preview over there, which he has, and the smoke which he has the ability to sculpt into, as he does a pack of wild monkeys and apes and wolves that he then sets upon the.
Sorry, did you say wild monkeys?
Yeah, huh? Are there any other kind?
Awesome.
Which he then sets upon the thugs. And it is with this transformation that Nelson undergoes that we really get our first look at what this series is going to be about psychologically. Now, I thought the idea originally for the series was that it was going to be about one of the original kids growing up, and it would be a study of the psychological ramifications of what happens to someone who grows up being a million different people every day. But instead, it's more approached from the side of, well, you know, you've got your, think of a cartoon like Ben 10. Say, this is kind of like Ben 10 for a more adult audience, you know, transformed by magic device. Or any random anime that you would care to name where a character or creature undergoes sudden transformations. And if you're the sort of person who thinks too hard about these things, you think to yourself, how does he know who he is now? How does he know what his new name is? And how does he know what it is that he can do? And so, once Nelson is transformed into Boy Chimney, everything is told from his perspective, trapped inside his own head, through this wonderfully jagged, shattered image of, like, Boy Chimney being resistant to the bats that are cracking off his skin as he strikes them with his cane and chokes them with his smoke. And Nelson's just like, what am I? My skin is brick. Call someone. My dirty gusts, my friend. I'm the child king of emissions. You know, it's this just tremendous. How do I know what I can do? How do I know who the hell I am? This splintered vision where he doesn't quite seem to be himself as Boy Chimney rises into the sky and Nelson almost loses himself in the smoke of the city that Boy Chimney takes it. He breathes it in like a drug, you know, he's like, oh yes, doesn't, well, this is the thing. In addition to all of this, he appears to be like a little, I hear nothing so much as like some kind of Dick Van Dyke Victorian chimney sweep type character. Bring up this brick by my head and scratch my itch even with so elegantly twirled a cudgel. I shall smoke you out. This is his actual dialogue, you know.
Take a drink.
We're all in my alley.
Thank you, sir. I was about to ask if he had a voice. What would that voice be?
There was no getting around it. The first thing he said, break out this brickway, my lad. You know, but that's how it starts, and then the mania that slowly creeps in it is positively Grant Morrisonian. Petrol breath, carbon particles, ruin, rendered effort, bone dust, burnt paper, stinking, singeing feathers, char and poison. So hush and breathe.
Wait, does that count as two drinks now?
We want them to be sober for the Avengers review coming up.
Yes. But remembering his friend, Nelson is able to overcome like the drunken effect of all the smoke and rushes Darren to the hospital. But just before he leaves, like he's like, those guys are dying, he says in his head. And Boy Chimney turns around and he's not quite himself. You know, Boy Chimney says, very well, allow it. And the smoke recedes back and leaves the guys not to choke to death, you know. Offhandedly, is no way to kill. And he leaves him off at the... And you know what? This is just one of the two transformations that he undergoes in the course of this issue.
Oh, my God.
So, character find of 2012 so far is Boy Chimney. He leaves him off at the hospital, and then in this wonderful, he's completely lost himself. When do I think about what's happening? He screams inside his own head as Boy Chimney just goes, ah, and the smoke just floats out of him and Nelson reappears on a rooftop somewhere. He goes to see his friend, but his friend won't tell him anything about what's going on. He manages to get a little bit of info from the attending doctor, and he goes back to the payphone to see if he can figure out what he did. And he's like, you know, he makes the obvious joke, you know, no tone, no connection. Who uses phone booths anymore, for Christ's sake? That's the toilet. So he starts dialing random things. Chimney, no, it doesn't work. Help, no. And then he starts just randomly free associating with him, saying, do I really want that thing coming back? B-A-C-K. Anyway, and that's the only way to keep Darren safe. S-A-F-E. I have to know what it was. And if so, the new transformation emerges. But he does not turn, and introducing us to the core concept of Dial H for Hero, which is that it's never the same thing twice. He does not turn into Boy Chimney again. No, he turns into Smoke and Misery, which we don't see the character yet, but just this waft of smoke and the narration that says there's just sadness and misery everywhere.
Oh.
Wow.
Huh. And wow. Then we cut to the crime boss, who is on the phone, who has something else going on. You know, there's more of a mystery in here as well. Something's going on with this guy. He is just working for somebody else. We cut to his office, and then there's just a shout from outside, boss, there's some hipster here. I said not now, didn't I? And then the goon who's just shouted in said, oh, God, my mom died, boss. She died 5 years ago. What are you? And then all of the goons from outside start, you know, I can change. Is he going to be okay? Oh, no. What's going on? Who's out there? Boom. Enter Captain Lacrimose.
Oh, my God.
Hero who he's dressed entirely in purple. His chest emblem is a weeping eye. He's got a big hipster haircut flopped over his face. Big black mascara tears. Big long black striped sleeves over his hands.
Wow.
And his the ability to summon up the moment of greatest misery in a person's life and reduce them to tears, and he feeds off their sadness.
He's an emo. That's amazing.
Yeah. But at the same time, and Nelson is inside struggling to deal with all of the sadness, and all he can do is focus on dog died, daughter sick, lost his lover in Iraq, can't tell his friends because it was another guy. Every tear makes me stronger. But in the same way that Boy Chimney is wickedly funny, what happens here is he's up against the crime boss who's got the gun trained on him. Your birthday, 7 years old. You wanted a Viking helmet so bad. What did you get? What did you get? A cowboy hat! No!
Oh my god.
All that misery and that little memory. Think what other moments I can bring to mind.
Wow.
That's the kid.
He's here just to
teach him a lesson. But there is also a woman in the office who we've seen in the background of a few panels and who gets up and has black sunken eyes and vomits out a stream of darkness at Captain Lacrimose, who finds he can't get inside her mind because there is no sadness and nothing at all within her. Whatever she is, she's there, and it prompts him to leave, and he does. And then we get, like, the crime boss reports to whoever his boss is, who has a strange laboratory and a man that seems to be in a sealed hermetic chamber, and they are going to kill Darren. And the very end, Nelson goes back to the phone box, studies it some more, and realizes that he's not dialing IFSO. He's dialing HERO.
Nice.
Cool.
The type of the issue is, what's the 411? This is written by China Mayville, who I don't know anything of personally, but
Hugo, am I right? Award-winning?
I honestly do not know. But
it says Hugo award-winning author, doesn't say for what. That's what the preview book says. Yeah.
Well, he is an author of weird fiction, this I know anyway. And this is the first time he's ever written a comic. And holy damn! If we could have four first attempts like this, that would just be super. The art's by Mateus Santoloco as well, and it is this lovely, jagged leak. I figure this book was going to be the case. Like Swamp Thing, like Animal Man, like Justice League Dark, this is basically a Vertigo book by any other name. You know, if the New 52 hadn't happened and Vertigo hadn't been considered a separate thing from all the superhero stuff, this would be a Vertigo book, you know. It is, you know, at its heart, the thing that I just immediately, as soon as he found the dial, I realized what he was doing. I mean, I don't know if that dial's going to come off there and be carried around with him later, because it was a portable dial originally. But I took a moment to think about it, and I was like, what a fantastic idea. Such a subtle thing, but it's a whole riff on the idea of the superhero who goes into the phone booth to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like Superman going into the phone booth and emerging. And Boy Chimney, character find of 2012, Captain Lacrimose. And these are the first goes. You know, if these are any indication of the kinds of deliciously twisted characters, I'm sad we'll probably never see Boy Chimney again. Bring out his brick by my lad. Doesn't smoke get everywhere?
did they never bring back any of the characters? Was it always different?
I'm not well versed enough in Heroes and Dial H for Hero to know, but I don't think that was the idea. I think it was the idea that they didn't do that. But, you know, if we could have more of this. Just the Boy Chimney, little Cockney. Well, I don't know if he's Cockney or not, but he brick up this brickway, my lad. This is the first thing he says, you know. So, I shall smoke you out. What do I offer?
He's Jason Statham?
No.
Really, really, you know, a top quality book. Just the basic idea of this, it's nothing particularly new. You know, Fran tries to help somebody in need, stumbles into a pyre, you know, local criminals. It's just straightforward. You know, it's a solid proven formula onto which some delightfully demented ideas are hooked. You know, really nice. The art is not, it's not as grim as you would think it is. Like, whenever he transforms into Boy Chimney in particular, and everything is just seen through this twisted, shattered panels of him looking out of his own body. You know, that's very good stuff. And, you know, it's just really, really good. I'm so glad that I decided to pick it up because out of the book, you know, just such a great, for just out of the park with the first issue, one of the best, like, new things I've read in ages, because I have no attachment to the Dial H concept, but it is a really great concept for guys who have, you know, unrestrained imaginations. It's the sort of thing you wonder why did Grant Morrison never take a crack at Dial H.
Yeah, it seems like a great thing for, like, today, for, like, a creator to latch onto. I'm really surprised that that's not something that was in the original 52, you know? That would have been a great thing to be in that original 52.
I could see that.
Well, Adam Grufflock in the chat, he was saying this is the best thing he's read all year. So,
cool.
It's
awesome.
Definitely up there, you know, as a new thing. It is strongly recommended that you take a look. Yeah, I mean, I haven't really touched too heavily on the mystery of the thing, you know. There's, like, what do they want with Darren? Who is the guy's owner? The man in charge seems to be named XN, or his initials, which is not, you know, normal initials. He's not just some mysterious, he's not just some crime boss. He's got some kind of crazy lab with some really bonkers stuff going on in it. Who's this woman? What are, you know, there's a real, like, mystery that is only very lightly hinted at, and it's right there. It's right there on the page, you know, but they don't give you a lot to go on with it. And if we had been presented with a less arresting concept for the book, I would be inclined to frown a little more heavily on how little they give away out of where we can expect this to go. But the Dial H concept is just so immediately intriguing and entertaining, and in this case, fantastically twisted, that I'll just, you know, I'll take a Boy Chimney monthly series. That'd be kind of nice. Yeah. Very much looking forward to the next issue of this one. That one's on the pool off the back of issue one. I hope it manages to keep its strength up. But I have the guy, you know, the author's won awards, and it's clear that he's not just somebody from, you know, it's not one of those cases where they've gone off and got a real writer to come in and write comics for the lark. You know, this is somebody who's coming with, like, a legitimately great take on the property, and I really look forward to reading more of it, and I would encourage everybody who likes a bit of that to go and check it out.
Nice.
It sounds awesome. Sounds really cool. Mm-hmm.
I will probably do the
I know, I need to get this
Comixology thing, and then that'll probably go on my pull list.
just before we move on, though, I forgot to mention Comixology put all of the original New 52 number ones on sale for 99 cents. So if you missed something,
oh wow,
cool.
I highly recommend Swamp Thing, which was awesome. Yes. Batman, which was awesome.
Yes.
Go read Action Comics number one.
Check them all out. I mean, come on.
Just check them out.
And this is a very good time for that as well. I mean, it's pretty obvious where they've done that too, because this month is the month where the trades start coming out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it's like just like they do. They're 3-day sales. Like right now, it's Avengers, I think, and it's JSA. But I think that the New 52 might be 99 cents from now on. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure. But they may just stay 99 cents.
Certainly, Justice League and Animal Man at least came out in trade format this week. So,
yeah.
If you're thinking about picking up the books, go check out the first issue for 99 cents.
You can't beat that a buck for Action Comics.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so
God Action Comics was also really good this week. Like, we don't have time to talk about it, but
it was awesome. Swamp Thing was awesome. There's so many awesome books I read this week.
It's a really great standalone issue of Action Comics that is both like slanted take on the whole Siegel and Schuster versus the law and various other things, and yet another like metatextual treatise on the idea of the superhero and what it means to people. You know, keep read Action Comics, for God's sake.
Daredevil was great. Avengers versus X-Men was pretty good too. A lot of good stuff came out,
but all of that stuff is superseded by Avengers.
Yes.
So we finally went and saw all of us, including me, who usually
I saw it twice.
We all went and saw Avengers this weekend. It opened on the 4th. Some of us went at midnight. I did not. I went this morning to see it. So let's talk about Avengers. I guess real quick, we will recap I'll try to encapsulate the story real quickly, which is basically
it was awesome.
It was awesome. That's it. no, basically,
and we're done. No,
Loki uses the Tesseract to return to Earth. Then seals said Tesseract and brainwashes a few people, including Hawkeye and Larson. I can't remember his first name.
Dr. Selvig.
Selvig. Yeah. Who was we saw in the Thor film, and we saw the Tesseract last in the Captain America film, mm-hmm. So we're doing good.
Was the thing that really took me, surprised me, well, not surprised me, but impressed me maybe when I was watching it, was how it wasn't just, here's a film in which these other guys from these other films get together. This was a film with a story that had legitimately been seeded across other films that plucked its plot points out of all the past.
Yeah, I mean, think about it.
He was working on it at the end of Thor.
Yeah.
Think about
it. And that continued from that, yeah.
I mean, just to take a second, let's see where the threads lie. You go all the way back to Captain America, First Avenger. Even though it's the most recent, it really is the furthest back. You had the Super Soldier Serum that was developed, and then Captain America fighting for the Tesseract. He also fought there along with Howard Stark, who he knows is Stark's father, Tony's father. Captain America was lost in the Arctic, but they did find the Tesseract, and that was preserved, and then eventually ended up in the hands of S.H.I.E.L.D. So you come a little bit further forward, and you find Dr. Bruce Banner, who's working on... basically, he's working on a research project. This was mainly the stuff that got retconned into the second Hulk film. We'll forget about the Ang Lee film. It doesn't really count. But really what they said Banner was working on was a way to try to redevelop the Super Soldier Serum. He tried to use an infusion of gamma radiation to stabilize the serum, and we all know how well that went. Then coming further forward, you have, of course, Tony Stark and all of his stuff, dealing with, all the cool Avenger stuff, him finding the formula from his father, stabilizing the Iron Man formula, all of that. And then, I guess finally culminating in, Thor and Loki in Thor's film with, the fight that actually sort of spills out into Arizona. Loki being expelled, the Bifrost being destroyed, which sort of comes then full circle again because then the Tesseract, Loki, becomes aware of the Tesseract as part of his exile. So it's kind of interesting because, yes, I mean, all of those threads sort of run through the films. We saw Hawkeye in Thor. We saw, of course, we saw Black Widow in the Iron Man 2 film. So all of those, threads all sort of went throughout the films, and in a great way they really did set up what would end up being this movie. So Loki uses the Tesseract to come back, then steals the Tesseract because they're going to use it to bring an army to Earth. From there, it's really just like, it's literally the Avengers assemble. I mean, from there, you sort of have Nick Fury working against... working on two levels. I mean, in one sense, there's this Council of Light. I mean, just the Council. not a Council of Dark, as opposed to DC's Young Justice Council of Light. But obviously, they have, we've been told that the Avengers Initiative has been canceled. They're more for sort of a military solution, but Fury still believes in the Avengers Initiative itself. From there they gather up the Avengers, and really just a lot of cool shit happens that we'll already talk about, all eventually culminating in a huge gateway being opened, an alien army spilling out onto Earth, our Avengers finally getting their shit together when Coulson dies.
Wait, spoiler!
This is all of a spoiler review.
Yeah, we should have said spoiler.
I mean, this is all spoiler here. If you're listening to this, I mean, I think you understand. I mean, we always...
You've stuck with us through the 2 hours for this.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, I think you already know. So Coulson dies, and then the Avengers finally get their shit together.
But seriously, Joss Whedon's directing this. Who did you think was going
to
die?
Somebody had to die. I mean, it's just...
Slice killing people.
Yeah.
disgustingly well-crafted, how they'd managed to make us like Coulson. I mean, I'm sure they knew he was going to die for a large part, probably since about Iron Man 2, or maybe since about since they started Thor, they had already had that mapped out. Because he was at the fore of everything, and they put him in all the little direct-to-DVD shorts that they made, and it was like this guy, get to like this guy, oh, bastard.
Yeah.
I love the one where he's stopping the... The robbery at the gas station. That one was great.
And then he's in, and they. But I guess you know, consolation. You can see him in Ultimate Spider-Man. I guess.
Yes, that's true. So,
and yeah. Avengers, isn't he in Avengers? Also,
he hasn't appeared yet. But
yeah,
tonight.
He hasn't appeared yet.
Maybe it's just Ultimate Spidey.
That would be cool. so anyway, the heroes get the shit together, and the council wants to blow up Earth. So anyway, Iron Man and the crew save the day, capture Loki.
To put it briefly.
I mean, that's really, like, the culmination. Now let's talk about all the awesome. Oh, my God, how awesome was it?
Like, the whole 2 hours.
The whole 2 hours.
Yeah. Seriously.
And extra minutes.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that I think you really notice is that it is, after five films, or Iron Man 2, Cap, sorry, six. Five films.
You can't count the original Hulk film. Like, is it the
Angry? After five films. This film would have been perfectly entitled to just dive right in. Just roll from there. Just be right there. But it doesn't, you know, it actively takes time to work as a film on its own level by showing you the characters and taking time to get them together. And, I think it's been proven that the thing that has made it quite a success, even critically, because remember, this thing is dragging, I think, at about 93 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, it's about a 93 on Tomatoes, yeah.
Is the fact that it doesn't forego any of that stuff and just dive right. It really does take its time to treat all the heroes as real characters and people first, with all of their own problems and issues in working together, instead of just giving in and going for the spectacle. Now that comes later.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, Phil, that's right, movie. You earned this by the time you get to that point. And it's like, yeah, you made me wait for this, and it was worth it.
Well, you know, this is going to sound really stupid, maybe. But, you know, one way I gauge how good a movie is as far as how well it moves and what's all well, there's this really great app that I have to use when I go to a movie called Run Pee. And I literally gauge a movie by how many breaks there are in a film. This movie had two. The last one was at the 56-minute mark of a 2 hour and 23-minute film. So there was literally not a decent 4-minute point where you could stop after the 56-minute mark.
Well, no, is this a thing that tells you when it's okay?
Yeah, it's an app. Oh, okay. If you're not familiar, with Run Pee,
it tells you like when the slow part of the movie
literally
is.
Okay. Yeah, they go through. Okay, they try to find like 3 or 5 minute marks where you can literally, you know, encapsulate it. They tell you what happened, and you can run out to the bathroom and come back. You know, it's really great if you have bladder issues or just have a small bladder, for a film. But one of the things, like I said, it does is it literally tells you, you know, how much is going to be important, how much is going to be valuable. You know, if I see a 2.5 hour long film and there's 4 breaks in there, it's like, oh, God. You know, that tells you it's not going to move. The fact that this film's last decent break was at the 56-minute mark and it's 2.5 hours long.
What bit of the film was that, do you recall?
The last bit is the part where after Stark puts, like, the little reader thing on the ship and then you see the guys start to play Galaga. And then there's the conversation. you see the conversation.
That man is playing Galaga. He didn't think we would notice. We did.
And then, but it's really just Stark and Banner having the conversation about, you know, what is their real motive, what's going on. Yeah. And that's just a talky enough point that they could encapsulate it. That's it. That's the last point that's really a decent point to run out.
And that's a great scene, too. I would hate to miss that.
It is a good scene, but, I mean, and that they even said that. They're even like, this is a really good plot building, but this is it. It's like, it's your last shot.
And I needed it here.
So I think that speaks, though, to the film, because Joss Whedon did a great job of moving the film. I do want to say that I don't know if it was CGI or what, but Joss Whedon really had me believing that Mark Ruffalo is smart. And that, I mean,
oh,
that was
on,
like,
that's like
Ruffalo. I don't know what that was, but it was brilliant.
He was a really good Banner. Yeah, I really enjoyed
I think
it.
He's the best Banner so far.
Hands down.
I've discussed this with a couple of people, but I think that Ruffalo's Banner is really a different story-wise. Like he is a different Banner to the Banner that Eric Bana and that Edward Norton played. They were playing Banners who were really emotionally repressed and trying to keep everything restrained. Where you know you get to the end of the Incredible Hulk, and the whole point of that is that it's reached a point where Norton's Banner is now trying to find a way to control the Hulk, and that is the Banner that we have in the Avengers. It is a Banner who has. You find some measure of control over the Hulk, so he is playing it very differently. But he definitely, you know, for my money, was certainly the most entertaining Banner on the screen.
Really was. And
it's safe to say that Banner and Hulk are probably the show's stealers.
I mean, well, and think about
getting away from Ruffalo, but you know, Hulk was the show stealer.
I understand that Ruffalo actually did mocap the Hulk this time, which Norton or Bana did.
Yeah, they didn't do their own mocap for that. In fact, Ang Lee, I think, did the mocap for.
And as a consequence, if you go and watch the Ang Lee movie, and you will notice that the Hulk does. You know, he might be a huge big thing, but he does move like a tiny Asian man.
Yeah, it's amazing.
jerky movement.
But with the Hulk, I think this is what works with the Hulk is because. Hulk is one of those characters you love to see, but it doesn't make a good two-hour movie.
No.
What they did with him in this movie was perfect. They've got his emotions. They've got his fun side, you know, his little quirks in here and there. It works for what we saw in Avengers. It didn't work for the other two or three-hour movies. That's my opinion.
That the possibility of a new Hulk movie has been massively increased off the back of Avengers. Like, there didn't seem to be...
More than just, like, you know, fans talking, I think. There was some talk that may be coming in the future.
Well, and even introducing the idea in this where it's like there was just that split second, but hey, he even had spoken lines that you could, like... God, I mean, well, in that one bit, I mean, I almost choked laughing.
Oh, Loki is about to go into full-on speech mode. Whoop!
That was
and it's the, no, no, but the best part is like the half pause in the
I
middle
know,
of it.
I think he's done.
And it's like, wham, wham, wham.
You're liable to be in a cinema where the audience is laughing so loud, you're probably not going to hear when the Hulk delivers his.
Yeah, I know. You almost missed the dialogue, but it was great. No, I think, to kind of go through maybe, Hulk was, even think about the fact that there was really only two transformations in this, and he really didn't spend a lot of time in the film as Hulk, in terms of the on-screen time. It was a lot of Mark Ruffalo.
The act of letting Hulk take ass and letting him actually be a little bit funny in the same way that they allowed Thor to be a little bit funny and Iron Man to be a little bit funny and Captain America to be a little bit funny instead of just being eternally maudlin.
Yeah.
They let the Hulk be a little bit funny. And hey, what do you know? Yeah. That's the magic formula for success with the Incredible Hulk.
He's not just a monster. I mean, he's more relatable now than any of the other Hulk movies. It's amazing.
Transformed into the Hulk for the fight for the final half hour, three quarters of an hour, however long that section was, and you're like, I wonder what he thinks about Thor. Are they going to come back to the fact that they knocked each other's brains out for 15 minutes in the middle of the film, and then you get that one scene, boom, punch, suddenly,
brilliant. I'll say that the other thing I like, again, and I think it's a tribute to Josh Whedon, is that he really – Stark didn't take the film over.
That was a big concern that somebody would dominate one or the other, and certainly with like a personality as big as Downey Jr.'s and just as big as Stark's even, that he really could have been Iron Man and some other guys. But it really legitimately wasn't.
He didn't take over. He wasn't the star, but it definitely did feel like this was Iron Man and Hulk's movie. You know what I mean?
The thing is, I thought it was more Captain America. That's just how I was viewing it.
Well, and I think that's a tribute too, because again, I think you identify with a certain character, you like a certain character, and then that sort of guides it. Yeah, I mean, I think they had a lot of balance in there. My wife complained. He wasn't complaining as we were going in because, you know, Thor's Thor. Thor's cool and all, but it's like there's not a lot of depth there. And I thought
there doesn't need to be. If you have a body like that, There he doesn't need to be.
Yeah, and that is kind of what she said,
that,
too.
That was Kilby's major complaint. He made two major complaints when we discussed, which he didn't say he hated it, but he said he was disappointed in
the movie. Yeah, he was disappointed in it.
He was disappointed because he didn't like Thor in the movie.
What do you
I don't think he liked
there's nothing. Thor. There's nothing to Thor. There's nothing to like or dislike. I mean,
he said he didn't like Thor at all. Okay. And he said Hawkeye is basically throwaway.
He's not throwaway.
What?
He just, hey,
which,
hey, I mean, Hawkeye did.
I kind of agree with that because, you know, you don't really. I mean, Hawkeye. I mean,
Hawkeye. He spends
like what, 3/4 of the movie is
Hawkeye had no real introduction. You know, Hawkeye didn't he got introed in Thor, but it wasn't like Widow's intro in Iron Man 2. He didn't do anything. Like, she kicked a lot of ass in the film and established herself as a fighter. You know,
I'm not taking anything away from Jeremy Renner because I think he's the perfect choice.
Oh, he was great.
Oh, he's great. You know, I loved him from his 15 seconds in Thor. I was like, that dude is Hawkeye. I don't know what's going on there.
But the exception is just the arrow guy.
That's something I think that Avengers did very well, was the fact that they did need a reason for why Hawkeye, beyond he was in Thor for 15 seconds, they needed a bigger reason than that for him to be involved and on this team, and the reason was they made it personal. You know, that's why the arrow guy is on the team, he's got a personal stake in it, because they did the whole mind control thing. And the mind control thing, in turn, like, allowed to actually give some... I mean, I was surprised at how much attention Black Widow actually got. I mean, I really shouldn't have been. It's a Joss Whedon film. The butt-kicking girl is going to take a major chunk of the screen time. But, you know, they Hawkeye was hardly throwaway. I mean, he was intrinsic to the Black Widow story.
And he was vital in the last battle. I mean, he was basically the eyes of the entire Avengers. He was, you know, he was...
I'm just very happy they did not use any part of his comic book costume. I hate that costume. He has the worst costume in comic history.
If you would have had the goofy mask, I would have loved this movie three times more. Yeah.
But I loved his tech, though. I loved the way they did his arrows, where they had the
arrowheads.
Yeah, where he basically could just put it in and switch out the heads. I mean, that makes a lot more sense than a compartmentalized, you know, quiver or whatever. I thought that was really cool. I
could understand it completely in that he doesn't have much in and of himself. Like, Renner doesn't get a hell of a lot to do. But
like
the character,
Hawkeye character, there, like, if you read the comics, he's essentially, like I said, he's essentially Shield of, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., Black Widow's buddy, you know, arrow guy. And that's it. I mean, that's basically what you get in the movie.
Yeah.
I love Hawkeye, but that was one of my complaints with it. It wasn't enough for me to say, hey, I didn't like this movie, but that was, like, one of the things, But he's not Cap, he's not Thor, he's not Iron Man, he's not Hulk. That's the problem.
When we get Hawkeye
and Black Widow
movie. When we get the Hawkeye and Black Widow movie, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., then, you know, they'll flesh that out and they'll make up for that and it'll happen in the next film.
This is the Avengers, this is not, you know, Jeremy Renner.
But
this
especially, like, just even the little moments, like when they're near, like, the final fight, and they all group up, and, you know, Iron Man goes, you know, all right, Cap, call it out. And then he's, like, directing the whole thing. I was like, it's the Avengers.
And then you had to follow that up with that one tracking shot where it goes from each person to each person.
Yes.
It shows you what they're doing all around, and it ends with the whole, tearing it up.
But even, there was one little bit, like, right after that when Cap comes up to, like, the police sergeant or whatever.
Oh, that's great.
He's like, all right, you go here and we set up a perimeter, go all the way to 39th and then do this and that. And he's like, why should I follow you? Wham, smack, boom, crunch. All right, guys, we need to get rounded up and everybody to 39th and then.
That was great.
Captain America leads by doing.
But Iron Man, to say that they kept Iron Man into check isn't to say that he didn't get some damn good lines.
No, he got some great scenes in the movie.
My wife about choked when he picked up Hawkeye and said, all right, Legolas, you might want to clinch as we fly.
Yeah.
He called Loki reindeer games, I think, at one point. So...
Okay, you know that's who we need to talk about is Loki. We haven't mentioned Loki.
So we got to get to Loki. Oh my!
Screaming for him in the theater. I'm like, go Loki, go!
I love Tom Hiddleston.
The audience.
I loved him in Thor because he went, like we said when we talked about Thor back when, he went on as much of a journey as a villain as Thor did with a character, and he really got to play Loki as massively two-faced. But then, like, in this one, I loved him just as much, but it's the, like, he picking wedges of scenery out of his teeth. Like, he was just...
Oh, yeah.
In there, he was like a forked tongue away from just being a complete serpent on the screen. Well, he was brilliant.
And I love it because
I didn't know if I would like him or not, because I was like, Loki, you know.
Loki, yeah.
We've done that, you know.
But this is a different Loki.
That's,
you know,
the thing that really worried. It was a totally different Loki.
Yeah,
it was a different
Loki and Thor.
I really liked him in it.
When we saw Loki and Thor, he was really someone that was like taking over a kingdom. I mean, that was like his thing. He was taking over the rule. Now he's a man without a kingdom, and he's desperate, and he's wanting one. And it's like almost like that scene that he has where he has all the people kneel. It's like half of that scene is to himself, because he's really trying to convince himself that this is his kingdom. This is what he can do. He can rule these people and he can be content, you know. And so it's just great because you see that, you know, happening even in the end scene when even Thor tells him, it's like, you know, he kind of realizes that Loki realizes it's gotten away from him, you know, and the aliens are really going to take over and he's really not going to have what he thought he was. And even at that point, he's still like, nah, it's too late, whatever.
I am a god, and I will not be bullied by...
He calls him dull.
Okay,
I love that
something.
He called Hulk
his
dull.
Look after that, his whole look after he gets his butt handed to him, basically, was golden. The guy who plays him, Tom Hiddleston.
He's brilliant.
Genius. I was just like, this guy is awesome. And when he's being interrogated by Black Widow,
I love that scene.
Loved it.
It was brilliant. It was one of those deals that, like, even though I had seen the whole sequence at the beginning of the film of Black Widow, where she's. Yeah. I mean, that was just a brilliant... I mean, again, another funny sort of Joss Whedon deal where she's, you know, tied up and talking to these Russians and they're, you know, all this stuff. And Coulson calls and he's like, okay, we need to come in.
And she's like, looks like she's in the worst situation ever.
Yeah, and she's like, I'm in the middle of an interrogation. You're like...
This guy's feeding me
everything. And he's like, I'm not giving you... What? And then she beats the shit out of him, but... Yeah. But even though after all of that setup, then you get into the Loki sequence, and she does the same thing, and I totally didn't even see it. I was just like,
I know you don't see it. That's the thing. It's like I'm happier that like there are really some things in there that are really obvious with hindsight, but that you don't. It's like I did not see at all, like all the S, T, and R and K getting knocked off the tower.
Yes.
I saw they were being knocked off, but and then it. Pulls out in the final thing, and it's I jumped about shot.
Yeah. So,
I shouldn't have been surprised by how he directed, you know, Black Widow, and he Black Widow was done in the movie because it's Joss Whedon. I was expecting, okay, she's gonna be in the movie, it's gonna be Thor, it's gonna be Hulk, but no. She was an interesting character. Oh my god, I really liked her.
She was a very good, strong female character, and I'm like, this is great. This is, I mean, you want to get the female audience in there. I don't know why you wouldn't with Thor being.
Yeah, there's Thor. Women aren't. You know?
There's a lot of eye candy for.
So did you weep when you watched the movie when you found out that Thor didn't go shirtless? I want to know this.
It was kind of disappointing.
Yeah,
it was. But you still got his pretty face.
Okay. So there you go. You got the eyes, you know. And, of course, Cap
didn't see the Hulk shirtless.
Yeah. Cap never picked up the hammer in this one, so I was looking for that, but that didn't happen. Maybe the next one.
I was even talking to Kilby, like I was like saying, because like when they showed Hulk trying to lift it and hit with that, I was like, why would they do that? If they're not going to have Cap lift the hammer,
it'll come.
Following up, like something's going to. But maybe they're saving it for something. Like
yeah,
that.
I think we'll get. Yeah. You know, we'll get to it maybe in the next film.
It'll happen in a sequel.
Anything else we want to talk about before we get to the end of the film?
I was going
to
say the big thing at the end.
Yeah, we'll get there. I want
where
to talk
you can
about
tell
that
the comic book fans of the theater.
Oh, that's what I was going to say.
The dog comic book fans.
References.
The
I didn't catch a lot of like in references. You know, a few lines.
No, there, it was surprisingly well structured in that way. It didn't. It, you know, there was a crack about an LMD in there. And
yes, that was the thing where it was like I figured out like that was like the wheat from the chaff. It's like how many comic book fans are in your theater?
Did you hear? Because
it was like me and two people that laughed, and they may have laughed because they heard me laugh. Or, you know, because it's like that's one of those things that's not really funny unless you know what it is. Yeah. And so
I mean, nobody even said Avengers Assemble. You know, it really didn't.
That's what I was going to say. That's what was disappointing. I'm like, did I miss it?
Yeah, I was really waiting for that line. But it's kind of quirky, so I don't begrudge him that. Well, any other reference? I didn't catch a lot.
I can't remember anything in particular.
Yeah. And that's okay. I'm okay with
oh,
that.
Oh, well, they
my question.
They did the Jane Foster thing. They just did the Jane Foster thing.
No. That was all like we could not afford her in this. We ran out of budget.
I was okay with that because
I'm glad that they at least referenced it and they didn't just
Yeah.
I'm just going. I mean, because I was surprised Pepper was going to be in it. That was kind of a shock.
Yeah.
Hey, and you know what? Another. I don't know if it was CGI or what, but she looked like she had hips.
I know. I'm like, what if Paltrow actually has?
She has like a figure.
That's not a stick.
Didn't notice, to be honest.
My question though is, Loki's army.
Mm-hmm.
Are they Skrulls?
No.
They're the Chitauri, which are the ultimate Skrulls.
Oh, is that what that is?
That's what I was thinking because, like, the dude's bottom of his mouth looked very Skrullish.
Yeah.
And I kept
thinking
he's taking his helmet off. He's going to have ears.
Yeah,
but
they never
looking too closely at that, but they called them the Chitauri.
I figured it'd be like something like that's how it's pronounced in like Earth language or something. What does it mean? And then there'd be like saying they are the Skrulls or something. Like holy shit!
Yeah, they just said it right at the very start, and it's like, it's the ultimate Skrulls. That's cool. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that they decided to just go with Chitauri instead of Skrulls because Skrulls carries the connotation of shape-shifting, you know, so they didn't.
I'd rather not do
if they want to do any pro- they want to do Skrulls properly, they could do Skrulls and not do, you know, that.
Yeah.
Malt.
So as we get into the end of the film, because I think we're probably running long enough on this episode.
Yeah. We're long.
It's the 100th episode.
Yeah. There's two bits at the end of this movie, and I knew this, I think we all knew this coming in, I did at least. There's two bits at the end of the movie. There's one sort of right after the initial credits, and then there's one at the very end of the credits. Now, I have to reference, talking about Run P earlier, I hit that 56-minute mark, and I was okay. By the time I got to the end of the film, I was literally about to wet myself. But I knew I had to get all the way to the end because I knew that there was a second end credit that I needed to get to. This will be referenced in a moment. So, and if you've already seen it, then you'll know why that's really funny.
Be going, yeah.
So, let's talk about that first end credit. We see the basically.
Okay, well, here, first of all, now, did you guys know about this before you saw the
No. Movie? Totally no idea.
Spoiled. The only thing I was spoiled on was that the army was the Skrulls, basically, because I knew that.
Yeah.
I'd gotten spoiled on that.
Because that had been out there for a week, obviously, since that happened.
Yeah, pointed ship crazy.
So we get to the end, and there's, you know, we knew the alien ship was destroyed. That's one of the things that happened. And there's like a chunk of floating rock or something, and the general that we had seen speaking to Loki before, he had made reference to there being someone else sort of in charge or someone else in the earlier conversation with Loki. But here he's talking to someone who I guess has their back turned in this initial sequence, and he's talking, and he basically says, you know, the Earth was not as easy as we thought it was, and that you know, it's you know, not going to be as easy. And to paraphrase, cause I don't think this is the exact phrase, but I think it is fairly close, which is that to try to take on Earth would be to court death.
Yeah, he basically said that.
Court death. Mm-hmm. And the figure turns, and it's fucking Thanos!
And he smiles.
And he smiles.
This is the part where in the theater where I'm like, okay, you can hear just a few people like cheering, and everyone's like, who's that? And I'm just like,
You're no comic book fan.
You don't know who that is.
I was the only person in my theater. According to my wife, I squeed like a girl.
Oh, I squeed like a motherfucker. I was like, Because I speculated it might be Thanos, because, you know, Master of Aliens or After the Cosmic Cube.
We had rumored that there was the Gauntlet, yeah. I think, had made an appearance a couple years ago at the...
Well, it did appear in Thor, yeah. Yeah,
so the Infinity Gauntlet is supposed to be in, what, Odin's treasure vault,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so, I knew that.
That's irrelevant, because... Yeah. The Cosmic Cube is the first thing Thanos goes after in the comics when he first appears as part of his... I mean, I don't know if you know, Thanos
Everybody connects him to the Infinity Gauntlet. I mean, like, that's his thing now, you know. The first issue with the cover where he's holding it up and he's... and the lights and everything. Yeah, that's... Oh.
Yeah, the Cosmic Cube was the first thing Thanos went after when he appeared. So I can see that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
So do you think... if and when the next movie comes out, they're going to go for the Infinity Gauntlet kind of thing?
I mean, I'm so blown away, because it's like, that is so big. I mean, it's big. It's just, it's,
I mean,
huge.
Thanos isn't really an Avengers body. That's the thing. I mean,
no.
I can understand what we were saying earlier, Trevor, where Kilby was hoping for someone else. I can see where he's coming from. You know,
you were hoping for Kane, like, or Ultron, because Ultron, please.
Ultron would have been perfect.
That's who I was going to guess.
I mean, the thing about the Avengers, though, is that they don't. They have Kang, they have Ultron, and that's kind of it. They don't really have their own baddies. They have other characters' bad guys. They have their members' bad guys who sometimes team up, you know? But I don't know, because, like, you've got to have Pym before you can have Ultron, so it couldn't have been Ultron.
Yeah. And Kang, they missed big time, like, Pym and Wasp. God, I wanted Wasp so bad in this movie. Wasp is made for fucking Joss Whedon. Why was Wasp not in this movie?
Maybe they'll skip it. Maybe they just showed Thanos, and maybe that'll be, like, a third movie thing,
Kang, I mean, Kang is probably a bit more viable for a second film, but I feel like Kang shouldn't really come into it until the Avengers are an established team and not just a bunch of guys who got together this one time.
Yeah.
You know, the whole being idea
with back Thanos,
greatest champions.
With Thanos, do you think the whole goddess and him thing would work on the big screen, or would they leave that out?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I'm literally floored.
If you're going into Thanos, though, because of right association with Infinity Gauntlet, you'd have to do that, wouldn't you?
And
we're
going to have to get Surfer, we're going to have to get Nova in here, we've got to reintroduce Fantastic Four.
When your comic book mind starts. I mean,
I know, that's Iron where Man, I'm like...
Thanos first appeared in Iron Man. This is something you forget, but Thanos actually first appeared in Iron Man, and then he went off and was in Captain Marvel for like a year and a half, and then he was in an issue of Avengers. That was the original Thanos arc, looking for the Cosmic Cube. Then he came back looking for just the Soul Gem, and then he did the Infinity Gauntlet in, like, what was that, late 80s, early 90s, thereabouts, you know? Yeah, so, you know, that was his... That was like his third, or maybe even his fourth big play, you know? It was much later on. I mean, I was chatting with my brother, and we were thinking about what Avengers 2 could potentially be about, and, like, he raised the interesting point that it seems very much set up now where the World Security Council takes it out of Fury's hands and try to make their own team. So you put War Machine on there.
Ooh.
You put the Abomination on there. You know, you've got super soldiers. You've got the Abomination. He's a soldier.
Yeah.
You've got War Machine. If Captain America 2 is going to be the Winter Soldier, you could take Bucky, you could make a U.S. agent out of him, you could just put him in his Captain America costume if they want a Captain America. You got those three. And then I said, and you could slap Giant Man and Wasp on that team. Then that's your government Avengers, and then they have to team up with the proper Avengers to, you know, beat Thanos or whatever the bad guy is. And in the course of that, you can probably introduce Ultron, and then the third film comes along, you do Ultron.
I know Brian was talking about the Infinity Gauntlet thing. He says, so, like, dude, they got to somehow get Spider-Man in it if they do Infinity Gauntlet. And I said, okay, they're probably not going to be able to do that, but, like, what about the Amazing Bagman? I think Joss Whedon would totally...
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
wow.
And then gets away with that, too.
God.
Costumes in the...
So there, I mean, so who knows? I mean, I think obviously we've got a few individual films to get through before we'd be ready for Avengers 2.
I mean, and that becomes the big question, of course, is that every previous movie after credits thing has led into the next one. So, I mean, is this set up for something else, or is that for Avengers 2? Like, what is that? We don't know.
We really don't know.
Well, I know that I needed fresh shorts afterwards.
Yeah, and I did too, because I already had to pee, mind you, when I saw this part. Yeah. And I'm like, oh man, that's so amazing. And everybody said you have to stay to the end part, so it's like, how amazing could that be? I'm watching credits roll by, and water is floating in my eyes. I'm like, oh my god, oh, this had just better blow me the fuck away, because this is, I'm like, I might not even make it to the toilet when I get out of here, and it rolls by, and then they're sitting at a table at a restaurant eating. Why? Because Stark made reference that when this was all done, they were going to go to this place and eat. And literally, that is it. The last part is...
Now, I didn't actually get to see that. That's not on the UK edition of the film. They added that after the international premiere. So he did get something.
Wow.
It's totally a great joke, and it's a lot funnier if you aren't about to piss your pants.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty damn funny. I think that was great.
But literally, I was like...
a lot of people that were complaining about it, they're like, that was so stupid, I can't believe it. I'm like,
I think it's a double joke. Awesome. For one, it references...
You have to team up to take down lunch. I mean, that's something that...
But the other thing is, I think it's a nice FU to all...
If you watch it, Mark Ruffalo cannot keep a straight face. He's almost losing it. That's what makes it so funny, because he's taking a bite, and he's just like... He wants to cry. It's like watching the classic Saturday Night Live when they're just not remembering, and they're just like... Mark Ruffalo is going to break character here. It was so fun.
Well, I think Thor had like a bigger sandwich than the rest of them too. I think he had like an Asgardian sandwich, if I remember correctly.
I should hope so.
Yeah, really. You know, but no, it was one of those things where I was like, this would have been hilarious if I wasn't going to piss myself. So it's like someone could have told me about this. I could have peed 5 minutes ago. But no, it was funny. It was totally worth it. And I like it because it was also sort of a little like, oh yeah, you stayed all the way to the end of the credits for this.
I thought it was great.
It was fun. So great movie. If you haven't go seen Avengers and we haven't ruined the whole thing for you, we haven't. I mean, literally we can't talk about everything that's in it.
There's so much stuff in it.
The spoiler things that we've said just doesn't even give credit. I mean, we hardly talked about Nick Fury, who's great.
And, yeah, the fact is, though, we focus like on the awesome bits and the spectacle and the funny and the bits that everybody is talking about. You know, this hasn't exactly been a professional critical level of review, but the fact is, you know, this is a good film.
Yes.
As well. It's not just
the character moments are also great. The interactions.
Yeah.
The interaction between the characters. We didn't even talk about that, and those were fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
See, like, I took my mom to go see it. She does not like action films whatsoever. She is the romantic comedy type, you know. And I'm like, you're going to have fun. And, of course, she had a good time with it. She fell in love with Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. She's like, I really like him. I really don't
know anybody that I couldn't recommend it to, honestly. Yeah, I knew people that don't even know comics, and I think they'd love this movie.
There are people who have not seen the other five films that want to go and see this. You know, we haven't mentioned it yet. That's one of the great strengths of it, is that it does work hard to stand on its own two feet, even while building a plot that is made up of little pieces of the films that have come before. But I was going to mention this in the news, but we didn't. It had the biggest midnight opening for a superhero film ever, and the eighth biggest midnight opening for any film ever, literally just behind Potter, Twilight, and Hunger Games.
Wow.
It had the second biggest opening day ever, and yes, as of this evening, 200.3 million, the biggest opening weekend ever in cinema history.
Wow.
The Avengers.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
It's amazing.
I mean,
well,
it's just
stupid.
When I was recording another podcast earlier today, it was 11:30 my time, and it already hit the $640 million mark internationally.
Yeah, and that's
it'll be part of the $1 billion club by the end of next week. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's the
handle.
I think we might get a sequel.
It's possible. Yeah,
it's possible.
No, I mean,
I just can't see The Dark Knight Rises hitting these kinds of numbers.
Oh God, no!
Yeah. If Dark Knight Rises can do that, oh my God, think of the money that movie can make. I mean,
you know, I mean, let's be honest. You know,
the Dark Knight rode on the back of a dead actor. I mean, you know. I mean,
That's true. I get it. That's true.
You know, I mean, I hate to be that guy, but that's totally true.
Even his performance, if he was alive, was awesome in that movie.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great performance, but I think a lot more people went to see it because it was his last performance, and, you know, I think it just got a lot more attention and hype around it.
I'm afraid that's going to hurt the third movie.
Oh,
I had the conversation with Kilby a while back, and he didn't think it would, but I think
especially now with how good Avengers has been,
people
are going to go back and watch The Dark Knight and go, oh, that's
It's like what we were saying at the very start of the thing. Although it's only a couple of years ago, it's a whole literal generation of how these sort of films were made ago. It's one generation removed from where superhero cinema is now and what people expect from it now removed. So, you know, we'll just have to wait and see how it turns out.
Maybe we'll be surprised.
You know, even thinking about Avengers now, I'm still thinking, when I was watching, I was thinking, is this reality?
Yeah.
Am I seeing this on screen?
Yeah.
Am I dreaming? Have I been dreaming the last 5 years as
this
to
real
this
life?
Yeah. This is reality. I mean, this is like a lifetime thing. Like, I never in my life did I think this would happen and this would come out. And it's
amazing. It's just as good as we would hope it would be. You know. So go see it. If you've seen it, see it again. If you've seen it again, see it again.
I've only seen it once, but oh my god, I'm totally going to see it again.
I haven't seen it twice.
It's very rare I go to see a film more than once, but I am going to see it again.
So cool.
You want to hear a confession? I watched the first Transformer movies 14 times in the theater.
Wow. I didn't quite do that. I did it like five times in the first day, I think. Or
I did it twice, three times.
I think I went to the midnight showing. I went back and did the first showing and then walked out, went right back in, walked out, went right back in, you know.
I think I saw all three Transformer movies at least three times, I think.
Yeah.
I saw
the first one three times because I saw it one time because I was on a holiday in America when it came out, so I had to go on my own. And then I saw it with my friend when it came back. And then I was somewhere where there was an IMAX theater where it happened to be on, and I was like, not passing up that chance. So I saw the first one three times. Saw the second one twice? I think so, yeah. And I think I only saw Dark of the Moon once.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw it once.
But no, this is just Avengers is just great. Go see it, you know. Go see it.
Yeah,
times.
I don't
support
see
this film.
Films multiple times normally, but I see this again.
Yeah. So.
Yep.
And if you want something different, go watch Cabin in the Woods with Chris Hemsworth, aka.
Oh God, that's
I want to see that movie.
Well, it has been a long, long show.
This is
our 100th episode.
What a great 100th episode, though.
I know. I don't know how we're going to top this as we go in. I think we're just going to have to start over at number one.
Yeah.
I just hope when the 200th episode comes out that, like, Avengers 2 comes out. I hope it's not
that long.
I know. I'm just saying. Like,
well, it probably will be.
Something big has to happen.
We need something.
I want to see Thanos like right now.
I know. I want to see the Thanos movie now. But really, we want to thank all of you, all of our listeners and watchers, and everybody that hangs out. I mean, you know, all the people.
Don't forget John Barber.
So John Barber was great to come by and talk to us, and we've got a ton of great listeners. And again, you know, Jetfire 2009 for writing our drinking game. We hope you're completely
smashed. How drunk are you?
Yeah.
I did not mention one Ninja Turtles. Well, there you go.
We talked to somebody compared Soundwave to a turtle.
Yep, there
you go. Oh, yes. Yep. It was
Tito. It's a party.
Yeah, but you then proceeded to say the word turtle. So that counts.
So there you go. but no, definitely thank John Barber. He was great. And we're working on, I may have some other people on as well. Almost had a different person. I won't say who that was, but we may have them on, hopefully on a later episode. That would be very cool. Drunkenness would ensue. But no, it's been, and I really appreciate, you know, I want to personally thank the three of you for sticking around and being here.
Thank you, Jay.
Every week. Well, you know, I appreciate it. But, you know, I could not do this show without each and every one of you, even though I occasionally do the show without one.
I think this might be a bad time to let you know.
Oh, by the way, yeah. Next week it's just going to be me, but no, I mean, it's been a great run. I absolutely enjoy coming on every Sunday with the three of you and talking about comics and joining all of you in the live chat and talking about it. It's definitely a highlight of my week, and I look forward to doing it for hopefully for another 100 or 200 episodes or until we get canceled, which we can't be. So no matter how bad this show gets, we will be here. but no, it's been great. So thank you all. So
yeah.
Awesome.
Yes. Thanks awesome. To our listeners. I think we broke some records today with our viewers.
We
put the word out and you all turned up this week.
So we
just have to put that word out, Avengers movie. Ooh.
Oh, we'll be there. So, but yeah, but, and so, you know, please feel free to join us live every week. It's always a party, especially if you're going to play the drinking game from now on, because we definitely want to see what kind of amazing drinking things can come across the chat, you know, so that's always a good time. But at that, I think we will end our 100th episode. So we will tell you again, check out the website, fanboyversus.com. Follow us on Twitter @fanboyvs. We would love to hear from you, so be sure to leave us feedback and all that cool stuff. So this has been Fanboy Versus episode 100. Thanks for joining us, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy Versus.
This has been Fanboy Versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.